Hi, and welcome to episode 82 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the comic series The Red Mass from Mars, and this week I'm joined by comic artist, writer, and creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
Writer, Down the Tube contributor, and our very own Silent Bob, Mr. Tony Esmond.
I've been to Alabama, so I'm feeling sexy and free.
Anyone who's listened to last week's show is just feeling a little bit sick right about now. And this week we're also joined by the man behind the show that kicks off the 2017 convention year. Yes, it's all kicking off now. Taking place on February the 4th at the Cheltenham Racecourse, and in its third year, if I remember correctly, that show's True Believers and the brains behind it is our guest, Stuart Mulrain.
So you built me up as the brains behind it. So.
Hey, look at that.
I too have just got back from Alabama with Tony, so I'm feeling
Oh dear, he's already been soiled before you even begin.
I was going to say it's clean, good clean fun, but I probably won't say that, to be fair.
No. We did the on your end. As well, didn't we? Yes. Didn't even have to be prompted.
No. Yeah. No. We're going to try to have good, clean, honest fun this week, folks.
I was not warned about this, so I've got to rip up my notes now.
You don't have notes, don't be stupid. How has everyone been this week in the comics world, folks? How is it?
Good.
Yeah, not too bad.
Good.
Busy. Yeah.
It's a bit of a crazy world we live in at the moment. So I think reading comics is probably the best thing to do at the moment.
Yeah, we're all avoiding social media, aren't we?
I am.
I said I'm going to take a break on Saturday night, and then I didn't, and then I paid for it. And
why do you do this to yourself, Dan?
I don't know. I find it a constant well of misery going on there.
Yeah, well, you know, perhaps I'll have to go on social media just to make you feel a bit better, Dan.
Yes.
With one of those fine selection of gifts that Twitter offers you these days. Maybe of SpongeBob doing a dance. I don't know.
We're just all becoming really stupid, aren't we? It's just turning us into stupid people gifs, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't you like an animated GIF? GIF, whatever it's called. God. SIF?
GIF, is it? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it used to be called GIF, and now it's SIF, because... Oh, no, that's Bleach, isn't it?
SIST.
Oh, it's gone mad before we even start. Yes, convention season is officially kicking off in a couple of weeks, and it's quite exciting, I think. This year is going to be a very interesting year for conventions.
Packed year as well, I think.
It's packed. People are moving around all over the place like they're playing on the Dodgems. I was trying to think of some sort of game that involves moving.
It's like Tetris, isn't it, of conventions. Tetris. They're all sort of fitting in different places now, aren't they?
Yeah, nice one.
Yeah,
and I tell you what, that's especially impressive because Tony probably doesn't know what Tetris is.
No, I know because there's a comic by Box Brown called Tetris. That's the only reason I know. I've never played the fucking flaming thing. I'm not an ignoramus, am I? Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to sit
there. It's even more impressive because of the speed they're dropping at now as well.
How is it? God. Well, they're like boxes you have to fit into each other. What are we, monkeys? Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
But the more you fit in, the faster they go, and that seems to be how the convention calendar's going now.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
So it's convention Tetris. That's what it's becoming.
I just sit there on the train with those like blocks that kids have, you know, babies have. We try and fit the round thing in the square. Sit with them with that.
You always, people, yeah.
What are you doing up playing Tetris?
London Supercom, Comic Con threw a bit of a fucking spanner in the works, didn't they? By changing the date this year.
Bit of a hand grenade, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
As did Thought Bubble as well. That's become earlier in the year.
And a different venue, isn't it? I said that,
and then it went oddly quiet, like I was the only person who knew about that. But yes, so there's lots of movement on the convention front, as we all know.
Yeah.
But Stuart's probably up to his neck in trying to organise things and herding cats at the moment. So... So True Believers is just around the corner. It's one of the
2 weeks away.
One of the great ones of the year. I'll start off this convention talk week by just asking you, how mental do you have to be to try and organise a comic convention?
Yeah.
I'm trying to put it on a mental scale of what's the mentalist thing. pretty mental.
How about what's the worst thing that's happened to you today? Because every day is a different day, isn't it? Every day seems to be like ups and downs. Oh, yeah, he's attending, he's confirmed, he's cancelled, he's, you know. all that sort
touch
of thing.
Touch wood, this year, yeah. We've not had any guests cancel.
Oh, that's good. Yeah,
so, oh, cool.
And all of our tables are still full as well, so which is the first year we've got this close to it without anything sort of starting to go tits. Because the last 2 years, we lost a couple of guests, a couple of big name guests as well, unfortunately.
Oh, right,
which
okay.
Is sort of the nature of the beast with these things, but...
Like, what do you do? Do you just hate them, never buy their comic again, blacklist them, tell all your friends about them, that sort of thing?
It depends how they handle it, to be fair.
Good man.
If they're like, I got a better offer from this thing, it's kind of, well, fuck you.
Because I've seen a couple of sites where they, like, conventions have, like, these are our guests, and then they got a box where it's like, oh, these people were turning up, but now they've cancelled. Is that the done thing that everyone does? They show that these people were coming, now they're not.
I do it on our page, especially with tables that drop out, because it's still promoting the... Even though they're not going to be there, it's still promoting their online presence. So, you know, if you were coming to see them, you can still find them online here and that sort of thing. And it just keeps people up to date. This year's the first year we've just put a vague guests on the poster rather than listing all the names. Because we were listing the names and then people were dropping out. It was like, do we keep redoing the posters? We put the small print on the bottom of the poster of, appearance subject.
Yeah,
that sort of thing. But I always still feel kind of like you're mis-selling it a little bit when you're like, so-and-so will be here, and then they turn up on the day and it's like, yeah, he cancelled in January. Did you not look at the website?
Yeah.
So
it's like you've got to go around with a bit of paper and paste it onto the posters everywhere.
That's
like
it.
Yeah.
So we thought this year we'll just go with a vague guests, and this year's been the year nobody's cancelled, so we could have put all the names on the poster.
Yeah.
But I'd rather save face on that end and have all the people that said they'd come. So.
Yeah. Which guests do you really not like, if you had to choose one?
There's a bloke called Vince on our guest list. Can't stand him.
Fucking hell, we all hate him. Yeah. We don't love you, Vince.
Whatever.
I just got fed up with begging emails.
I sent you the pictures.
Has Vince asked for anything special this year? Do you know what I mean? I know he's got a few peccadillos.
Well, he wants something special from Alabama. But...
Well, the furries from Alabama. They wear cowboy hats.
why do I do it every week? Why do I do this to myself?
So who are your guests this year, if you don't mind, don't mind saying?
Yeah, no, here we go, I reel them off now and forget a couple. We've got John Paul Bove and his wife Jess Bradley's coming. We've got Mike Collins is coming again. We've got Dylan Teague back and Jack Lawrence. We've got a few returning faces. And then we got a couple of new ones for us. So we've got Cam Smith, Ben Oliver, the Etherington brothers, Paul Grist, who did Jack Staff. I was a massive fan of Jack Staff.
Yeah,
I love that
one. Yeah. So I'm really, really excited about that. John Higgins, Sally Jane Thompson, Andrew Wildman come in. Des Taylor, who I really love his art.
Yeah.
And like I say, we've got somebody called Vince Hunt on the thing as well.
He's a wanker.
Apparently he does...
He's a sexual.
I was going to go on mute while I sob.
I was going to say nice things about him, but
that'd be a fucking first. Oh, this is turning into my favourite episode for ages.
Jesus Christ! Mark the date, folks, because this is the day that it'll stop.
Yeah, it comes to the fight podcast.
when it comes to guests, though, and we've talked about it on previous sort of convention talk, that some shows they just do the same guest list every year.
Yeah.
I mean, what in when you come to like book guests, do you like how many new faces do you like to bring in each year?
I try and get either the majority new faces or people who weren't there the previous year. Right. We've got some people like Mike Collins and Dylan Teague. I will have there every year. For as long as the show runs, if they're happy to come,
yeah. Right?
Just because they're great value and they're really, really nice blokes as well.
Yeah,
and they seem to be really popular with people. It's a tricky thing because you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings by not inviting them back. I mean, I'd have everybody back if we could, but
yeah.
I'd end up just giving away a load of free tables and not being able to fund the event anymore. So it's sort of a tricky thing, and I try and. We try and have one guest spot that's like a small press guest. So last year, Rachel Smith was our small press guest. The year before, it was the guys behind Big Punch. So Nick Angel and John Locke.
Yeah,
they're essentially like morphing into the same person.
Yeah,
so that makes sense. I think
Nick Locke works. Yeah. So like Vince's our thing this year, but we don't make a thing of, like, you know, and a spotlight on this small press guest. It's just we add them in and, you know, they are one of the guests. But I know some conventions do, like, a spotlight guest or something, and it's kind of, that's cool, but you're kind of singling them out a little bit, and it either makes them sound like you're bigging them up unnecessarily, or you're sort of shining a spotlight on them because they're a bit shit. And not that they are a bit shit, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, you walk that fine line between, you know.
Yeah. Patronising, or yeah, yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah. So, what's the deal with, if you're a guest at your convention? I take it it's, do you pay travel? Do you, or do you just pay? Just give them a free table, or is it? Is there a sliding scale? Or
our standard offer is that we'll give them a free table, put them up for the night if they need accommodation the night before, or the night after, and we offer to pay travel as well. Some take us up on it, some don't, which is good because if the ones that don't, mean we can add a couple more names to the guest list. It doesn't eat into the budget.
Okay.
And I must say, you're on top of communication as well. Like, some conventions, you know, you won't hear anything for a while, and then you'll get an email out of the blue. But I know you're, from the organisation side of things, and this is the first time I've got a guest table, but you're on top of, like, you know, do you need this, do you need that, you know, because we're booking up stuff. You get it all done in advance, don't you? Do you give yourself sort of deadlines for those sort of things, like booking hotels, etc.?
Yeah, I try to. I mean, it's that tricky balance with booking hotels. You don't want to book them too close and then you can't get everybody into the same hotel, or you book it too far in advance and then a load of people cancel and you're just left with a load of empty rooms, which, you know, could have a bachelor party style party going in one, I suppose.
Hey,
again. Yeah.
Tom Hanks and a donkey.
That's my favourite Tom Hanks movie.
Quite right too.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, how do you find guests, Stuart? Because it's sort of Vince says, we're not naming them, but there's a couple of conventions. I look at their websites and I think it's their last year's website because it's almost exactly the same set of guests. You know.
Yeah, I mean, our first year, we sort of looked at who other conventions were inviting or had on their guest list. And then, to be perfectly honest, we pilfered those names. I mean, I had a guest list of people I'd love to have. And we just look and see if they've got a website and try and contact them through that, or occasionally social media, which is a hit and miss sort of thing.
Because you were Kickstarter. You had Kickstarter help.
We kickstarted the first one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was
a
horrible experience.
Was it really? Well, tell us a bit more about it. Because obviously you use that for the first year, but now you're up and running, aren't you? You're like a concrete thing. So what led up to and inspired the Kickstarter help?
The Kickstarter was purely, I didn't really know how to go about funding the event, apart from doing it from my own pocket, which it's an expensive event for me to put it all on my credit card sort of thing. So we were looking at ways we could sort of get the word out. The great thing about Kickstarter is that it sort of publicizes the event, gets a lot of people excited about it and behind it, and it sort of lights a fire under people to back it and make it happen.
Right.
The danger is once the Kickstarter's gone, you try and do it the next year, sort of the fire's gone a little bit. So people are just kind of like, oh, it's back. It'll always be back. And sort of the urgency to sort of back it isn't there so much, but
something wrong with back it with Kickstarter in the second year, because people think, you know, if you didn't make enough money on the first year, what are you doing, you know? Yeah.
We said all along that I get, like, comics doing it, so your first issue you Kickstarter, and then you Kickstarter your second one, and so on.
Right.
To a point, I think there should also come a point with that where it's kind of like, well, I've you for five issues now, you kind of...
Yeah.
And I'm the same with events. I know some Comic-Cons go back to the well of crowdfunding every year. It's kind of like, well, we've got you established by this point. You know, you've had your first year. If you can't stand up off the back of your first year, why should I get excited about doing it again?
Yeah.
So we tried to run the ticket sales on for the second year a bit like a Kickstarter, where we had rewards and that sort of thing, which sort of worked, but it also caused a lot of problems further down with regard to when people were coming in on the day. We had a horrible, horrible queue situation.
Right.
Everybody was trying to collect their stuff, and it was kind of like, And we massively unprepared, because the first year we opened the doors and there was about three people stood there. And it was kind of this is really heartbreaking. But then everybody sort of poured in about 20 minutes later. So this year we were a bit like, look, reception was dead initially, so we won't put as much resource into reception first thing, and it just completely balls us from the start.
No.
We just completely underestimated how popular we'd be the second year. So this year we've looked at that and completely restructured how we're going to run the reception area. So it should be a smooth in, show your thing, you're into the event kind of thing.
Is that what you've got to do, show your thing? Because I'll get in a few conventions that way.
And you get kicked out of a few for that at the same time.
If you show your thing, you get in the next year. No, I'm not going to say that. If my mum works on the reception thing, I don't want somebody flashing her.
Look at my guest pass. Look at it.
Yeah, we'll just cue a load of your mum jokes now, just for the outtakes. Be fine. Yeah. Some of our favourites. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, oh, that's good. Okay.
So but yeah, and, sorry.
Every year is a massive learning for you, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, we went into it with a 5-year plan. If we made it through the first 5 years, we sort of established where we wanted to be, and we didn't want to break away from that 5-year plan too much. Because I think the other danger that events have is that they run before they can walk. Yeah. Our first year was really successful, so we're going to throw all this stuff in. And our policy has always been, if we can't do it to the standard we want to do it at, it doesn't go in that year as much as we may want to do it.
Yeah.
So it's like we've been building a lot towards workshops, and we're slowly building them up rather than making them a big thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So an all ages sort of approach.
Yeah, that's it. I mean,
yeah,
we still struggle. We get quite a few families come in, but not as much as I'd like, because we're very much about inspiring kids as well to go out and create from it. Some of the best emails we've got are from people who visited 1 year as a ticket holder and then came back the next year with a comic to buy a table.
That's cool, isn't it?
That's pretty good.
Which is pretty much the best compliment we can get, and it's people who've met people or talked to people behind tables, either been inspired or got together with them and created something.
Yeah.
And they're bringing it back to the convention where the genesis of the idea was
born. So is that where bookings like the Etherington Brothers came in, from that sort of all-ages point of view? Because I know they do kids' comics, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They dropped me an email out of the blue.
Right.
Just being kind of like, you know, we want to introduce ourselves, this is what we do, we'd like to come along, if we can have a free table, you don't have to worry about anything else.
Yeah, perfect.
Not just because, you know, they were just doing it for the table, but because they're a great attraction, I think, for the family.
Yeah, they're good talkers. I think they do a sort of workshop thing at Nottingham every year as well.
They do, yeah.
It's very good, yeah.
Yeah, because I asked about
that. They got a good following as well, and also their work is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I picked up one of their books yesterday in the Proud Lion, the Cheltenham comic shop. Just sort of found it randomly browsing the shelves, yeah. And I was like, ooh.
Which one was that? Because I've got Long Gone Don. I had to make sure I said that.
I picked it up.
I knew that would make you laugh.
I've got the sequel, Where's My Dong Gone?
So yeah, these are books for kids.
Yeah. If a kid listened to this, I would probably throw myself off a tall building, to be fair.
Yeah. Bad. And that Where's My Dong Gone, it's kind of like Where's Wally, but with more public toilets, isn't it?
Yeah. That's the second time you've mentioned public toilets. You texted me with that yesterday, didn't you?
Yeah, but that was to meet up. Don't say it here, Tony. That was just a meet up. Come on.
I accidentally texted the wrong person on WhatsApp, and I texted you two, didn't I, saying I'm parked up by the garages, hurry up, and immediately I got a flurry of "you're dogging, aren't you" texts from you.
Had to be done.
Oh dear. Anyway, back to the Etherington Brothers.
Speaking of family comics.
Yeah. But they definitely, like, they've got an audience, and, you know, they'll probably bring that audience with them, won't they? And they're good quality books as well. And like I say, they're good talkers. So, and they're very enthusiastic.
Artwork as well.
Yeah. Oh, it feels, their work feels very European to me. There's like a real sort of, you know, that Asterix kind of feel. You know, you open up those European
sort of.
And you just look at it, and you look at how much detail is in there. And the colours, it's almost like watercolour-y, that kind of like painting sort of process. But I think them getting in touch with you says a lot about your convention.
Yeah, I mean, this year particularly, we've had a lot of people getting in touch about tables. I mean, we had to add tables to the balcony this year because we had so many people on the wait list.
Oh, really?
We sort of looked at a way we could add them in, which sounds like a humble brag, but I don't mean it to be. It's sort of, our popularity on the circuit seems to be growing, which...
To me, that's kind of a shame, because I kind of like sitting up on that balcony just looking down and reading the comic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which brings us to the venue, Cheltenham Racecourse. What inspired that?
Initially, we were going to be looking at doing it as like a small event, nothing against leisure centre events, but we sort of considered that. But I was kind of like,
we're back in the 80s again.
Yeah. Basically, yeah, that was my, like, the old Gloucester Comic Con back in the day. That was at the leisure centre. That's what it was, right. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
But we sort of, because it was myself, my friend Andy, who does all our graphic design work, so he does all the posters and the logos and everything, and who does stuff as Iron Zoo, and Mojo Jones, who's a burlesque dancer and does a lot of cosplay.
Hang on, so, what's this about?
Burlesque as well. But, yeah, she sort of came to us with the idea of putting on a charity Comic-Con, just like a small thing, and it was...
Mm.
And we'd just come off of doing a short film festival, which...
All right.
Was a wholly unsatisfying experience. I just didn't enjoy it at all, and there was part way to it that myself and Andy sort of looked at each other and like, we should be doing a Comic-Con.
Why didn't you enjoy that? Was it just...
Yeah.
It was... a lot of...
You can tell us. You're amongst friends.
It's trying to find the right words. It's watching a lot of shitty films. By people who are just kind of like, you know, I watched Blade Runner, so ooh.
God, I know the crowd. Yeah.
And that sort of thing. And then the person we were organising it with wanted to do it as a competition. So it's like, well, I'm not really big on the competition side of things. I'd much rather people came and, you know, the achievement was their film was shown and everybody was on a level playing field.
Yeah.
But the person we did it with sort of insisted it was a competition, so we did it as a competition. We picked a winner that I wasn't happy with. And then he buggered off, so I had to do the presentation at the end, and there was just one guy sat in the front who's like, my film wasn't even in the top five. I was like, I'm really sorry. And it was just, I wanted to do something that sort of celebrated the thing I love. And it sort of turned into just another kind of like, you know, I'm better than you sort of thing.
Yeah, I've met a few film students in my time. I get where you're coming from. People who think they're the only people who've just discovered movies like Blade Runner. I completely understand where you're coming from.
I was probably that brick once upon a time. So.
Yeah.
I made a couple of films before I sort of... Because I always wanted to make comics, but I just didn't have the consistent art skills to be able to do it. I mean, I'm an alright drawer. I'm not brilliant. So I thought, it'd be easy to make a fucking film. So I went and made a couple of indie films, and they didn't really do anything, but I had a bloody good time making them.
Yeah.
We used to call them, it used to be time-based media, I think of it. We used to call them tea-break media, because the fucking film students never used to do anything. Except at the last minute when they're banged something together, and they're like, yeah, this looks like it's put together in a day.
Yeah, I call them sitting about people. Every company like that seems to have about two people who work, and then about four or five people who do the sitting about for them.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, we saw some amazing short films as well from local
people. All right, we're pulling it back, we know.
See how much
it was 90% drops.
I'm well up for a sitting around job. That suits me down to the
ground. I'd love one of them. I never seem to get it, though. Yeah.
Oh, well. It's one of those sods fucking running around.
Yeah.
I'm a postman by day, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've worked in HMV for years, and that was a wholly miserable experience as well, so. I got out and then got this, which affords me a bit more time to put into True Believers, fortunately, so.
Cool. Stuart, we seem to be learning this week that your life is full of wholly miserable experiences. So, what?
Well, among the common link.
Welcome to the show.
To be fair, HMV was great up until the point I had kids. And then once I had kids, it didn't really fit in with that sort of thing. By the time I was getting home, they were going to bed and that sort of thing. And
yeah.
It was kind of sucking the joy out of things like that. Yeah, it wasn't freeing me the time to put into True Believers that I wanted to put in.
Yeah.
So I'm intrigued. So day one, when you decided to start doing this, did you sit down and go, right, comic convention, I love these guests. So I would love to get these people. Did you go from the top down? Did you say, right, let's try for Alan Moore. Okay, let's try for Warren Ellis. You know, and worked your way down. Did you go for the big guns initially or...
Well, we sort of had a list of both. We were clear as much as possible we wanted UK-based artists, purely because what we were, it's expensive to fly people over, and it's also kind of unreliable given the time of year we were at and the weather in America around January, February. Depending on where they're flying out of, you could end up that they're snowed in.
Right, okay.
Or something like that. Plus, the bigger conventions get those. It's not really the draw it used to be, unless you're getting somebody who's not done a con for a long time. It's like our first year, we in a bizarre, like, 2 in the morning moment of madness, I emailed Neil Adams and invited him. And then a moment of madness on his end, he went, yeah, I'll come.
Oh, God.
Yeah, shit. and unfortunately, it all sort of fell apart at the end.
Right.
Which was sort of our big major setback on the first one. And that sort of put us off a little bit getting American guests. Plus, there's so many great UK-based comic artists.
I know, I'm particularly thinking UK people, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the greatest comic creators ever are, you know, English and Scottish, aren't they? Well, and some Irish, apparently.
Yeah, that's
true. Yeah, it'd be nice to, you know, do you try for the big names? Like, I haven't seen Warren Ellis at a convention for donkey's years, you know.
He doesn't do them anymore. We've invited him 3 years in a row, and he was like, right. Stop emailing me, I just don't do them anymore.
Right, okay.
Went from polite, I'm not really interested, but thanks for inviting me to, just fuck off.
Well, I mean, Alan Moore does events still. I mean, I've seen him at a couple of events in the last 5 years or so, you know.
He certainly does. He'll just sort of pop up at something local, though, won't he, like Alan Moore?
Yeah.
He'll just be like, oh, I've got to go get some milk. I'll do a talk at this.
I know he's done some things in London as well. I've been down to see, and, you know, I just wonder with something like Jerusalem coming out, was it worth, you know, you look to see when these, I was more sort of thinking, you look to see when these people have got something big coming out, and you then have a little poke to see, oh, is it going to be worth trying to get him now? You know, he has got a book to promote, or he's got a new comic out, something, you know.
Sometimes we're just blind lucky, like with Rob Williams last year, we got him just before the cusp of the on Suicide Squad.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
Being massive like that. And then, yeah, like I say, sometimes we're just blind lucky. Sometimes a lot of the things, I went through a lot of like the 90s comics I used to love, like Nightfall and that sort of thing, and looked at the UK artists that worked on that.
Yeah.
And they were on my list. And I had a couple of Americans as well. One of the first people I wanted to invite was Terry Moore, who does Strangers in Paradise.
Yeah. Yeah.
I adore Terry Moore, and I had a really good experience with him when we were making the first film, because we wanted to use his comic images in background in the film, and actually as a key part of the story, because the character was looking for a particular issue of that was the underlying thread of the film kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we emailed him, he was like, I'll do anything for free promotion. I was like, cracking.
Nice.
Yeah, he's just been really good to me ever since. He's let me interview him a couple of times for Starburst magazine and that sort of thing.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, so he was sort of first on my list, and I was like, I'm going to do this. He was like, look, to be honest, it's probably not worth your while financially, me coming over, and it's probably not worth my while financially coming over at the moment. But when you're a bit more established and set up, you know, on a bit more solid ground, get in touch with me again then.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought when Rachel Reisen was coming to an end that this is the time to invite him, and he announced he was going straight into Motor Girl. And it was
right, because I know he's done a lot of European... I saw him at Lucca in Italy 5-6 years ago, so I know he does fly over to do stuff in Europe, I think.
Yeah, because he did one in Spain, because he mentioned the film we were making, which then got us a lot of people thinking, like, what is this Strangers in Paradise movie being made in the UK?
Right, okay. Yeah, yeah.
We're not really that. I think you've misunderstood what he said. But but yeah, he inadvertently... if you look through some of the back issues, the posters for our films are in some of the issues of Strangers in Paradise.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Which is, kind of cool. I kind of look on it now, kind of like, that film was so dreadful. I mean, awesome memories making it, but, you know.
Yeah.
You're always critical of your own thing, so I sort of look back at those issues now, and I'm like, but at the same time, cool, I was in a comic.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? Yeah.
But, yeah, and then we sort of worked out a list, and that, like I say, we started looking at other cons. We looked at, like, Melksham and saw who they were inviting, and some of the other ones of that sort of size. And sort of worked out based on reality who we could potentially get on our budget based on who events with a similar budget were getting.
Did you also sort of go to see some events as a punter and basically just took loads of notes?
I didn't, because I was working at HMV. I rarely got weekends off. So I didn't get to go to many events. I mean, Jo, because she's on the cosplay circuit, she went to a lot more events than I did.
Yeah.
And the other thing was, a lot of the events at the time didn't really appeal to me, because they were more, this guy was in Doctor Who for 3 seconds, come and pay £20 for a photo.
Yeah.
And less, it was more kind of like, you know, have you got any comic guests? Yeah, they're over there under the stairs. And it was like, this, and that was a big driving thing for us creating True Believers, is that it was a nostalgia thing. I wanted to create a con that I used to like going to, that wasn't all about the guys from Star Wars that want £20 for an autograph. Because they were still going Princess Leia in the throne room scene or something.
Yeah.
It was about comic artists. Nothing against the film cons. They serve a purpose and people like them, and that's fine. They just don't do anything for me. Autographs don't really do anything for me.
No.
I'd much rather get a sketch, because with a sketch you're getting something unique to you.
Yeah.
Even if you go into my cons and be like, can you draw Gambit for me again? He's like, for fuck's sake, I've done this a million times. There's always going to be a unique Gambit for you.
Yeah, and of course, yeah.
To me, that's infinitely cool, and that's sort of why I have no issue with bringing certain artists back each year. Because yeah. You're always going to get something different. You're always going to get a different experience. And it's nice to catch up with them as well.
Yeah, it's also good for, like, I know, certainly walking around some conventions, you don't always get time to pick up that sketch or to meet that person.
Yeah.
So if they come back the year after, you know, that's cool, isn't it? Because that's an extra incentive. Oh, I can finally get that sketch by that person. That they were too busy last year. I can head to them straight away.
So, and you get the little moments. Like, the first year we had Lawrence Campbell there, and I was talking to one of the people who came as a punter who had a ticket.
Mm.
He was like, I was talking to him and looking through his work, and I realised it was that page, and he'd never connected that it was Lawrence Campbell who did it. He was like, I had to walk away from his table. I was almost crying because that page meant so much to me.
I was like, that's a great. He's a great artist. So he's on BPRD, isn't he? He does stuff on there. Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really nice.
Yeah, and it's sort of, you don't really get that experience so much with an extra from a TV show or a film.
Oh God!
I'm honestly reviewing that. Hey, I'm totally baffled, but I don't understand it whatsoever.
Yeah,
I don't understand meeting someone, a bigger star, if you know what I mean, who's kind of been in a TV series, but someone who played like it.
You're kind of paying for a fake moment. It's not like I bumped into Michael J. Fox on the street and, you know, took a quick cheeky selfie with him or something. I've paid to sort of be herded in, stand next to him, get a couple of nice pleasantries, and then shuttled out again.
Get a 90 quid
blurry photo or something. It's kind of like, it's like, it's nice, but it's a fake moment. It's not real. Whereas,
if anyone wants a fake moment with me for 90 quid, by the way, just ask.
Yeah, I've seen cards in phone boxes.
Yeah.
That's about two fake moments, 90 quid.
Yeah. But we did that.
Getting a sketch from artists, you get a chance to interact. Sorry, you get a chance to interact with him as well while he's drawing it, you get a chance to interact with them while they're drawing it.
Yeah,
if you my recommendation move on and come back later.
If you're going to ask for a sketch, pre-order. I think you see someone at a convention, pre-order a sketch from them. I think it always works best that, you know.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you've got to go and have you finished it yet? And you know this sort of thing.
Especially it's that sort of awkward thing. Yeah. It's like you've lent them a tenner and you want it back.
I've certainly
when I'm at a convention, I'm always on the sort of table and talking to people mode, and I can't multitask. I'm a simpleton. So to draw, when I draw, I'm sort of fully in the zone of drawing, and I can't necessarily hold a massive conversation with people. I always admire all the artists who can, but I can't. So when it comes to like sketching at cons and stuff, like this week, I just sort of said, I'll do a couple of limited sort of commissions. If you want to draw a character in this style I've been using recently, just let me know. Because like you say, Tony, I like to sort of do that work, and someone comes to pick up the picture, and then you have a chat with them. You know, they pick up something that they're already happy with, and then you can have a massive conversation with them. It's not like they turn up at the table, give me your money, right, here's your picture, fuck off. I genuinely look forward to like meeting these people and then catching up with them. So that's cool.
And you're putting yourself under pressure as well to get how many shall I take, and then some bloke goes, any chance of doing one more? So you end up doing six. You don't get a cup of tea.
Yeah.
You know, you just sit at your table and draw, and then the convention's over and you feel bad because you haven't finished that final one, you know.
So, as well,
I mean, we get some guests that insist on, if people want commissions, they much prefer them to have them in advance. They do them on the day at a push, but they much prefer to get them in advance. I completely understand that, because I don't think I could draw. It'd be kind of like, you know, organise this con and we're all going to watch you do it. It's kind of, kind of thing. I don't think I could cope with that kind of pressure. I'd get performance anxiety.
Don't we all?
No.
I'm getting it now. Just one for the ladies there, Dan, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. Ladies. Yeah.
Got to keep that illusion going.
Oh, dear. Anyway.
To be honest, if you were doing a sketch and then like someone kept on coming around every 5 minutes to see how he was getting on, it would be really off-putting. I would find it very difficult. So I can totally understand why people want to kind of get a few in the bank, as it were.
Well, I know as an artist, I don't have a patience for that either. I'd just be kind of like, scribble, there you go, piss off.
Yeah, kind of from a fan's point of view, I've done it a few times where I've gone back, checked a couple of times, felt a bit bad, so left it till right at the end of the convention and gone back, and they've gone.
Yeah, fuck.
There's one with one particular artist, I won't mention his name, but it might be something similar to Burroughs and Jason, who I email once a year to say, hey, get on my commission. I just do it out of mischievousness now.
Yeah.
You should go to cons and just stand opposite his table. Don't interact, just stare at him.
Yeah, hey, getting on with that convention. How are you going to get on that sketch, Jason? What one? The one from 2008 that I paid you for. You know.
I was come up thinking of an idea of doing a sketch or a commission gift voucher you could sell at your table. And people would come up and say, right, I want a sketch. And it's like, look, you don't do it now, but I sell you the voucher. You email me with the scan of it and telling me what you want or the number on it or whatever. And then I'll do it and send it to you, rather than be under pressure to do it there.
That's
and
a
then.
Good idea.
I'm not sure how that would work, or because you're basically trading on trust, aren't you?
Yeah.
See, you're all right because you're a trustworthy chap, Dan.
Yeah, you set him up for the con, yes. And then he's
probably other ones that are just.
82 sure episodes. This is all we've been going on about. We're ready for our big con, the Long Eye.
I want you all con. To join my pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
No, but I think something like that might work because if you're not going to do them on the day, then you never know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's quite interesting.
That's it, and it's in your interest to deliver on it because the worst thing you can do is piss off one fan.
Exactly.
Oh, God,
especially with Twitter.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Speaking of Twitter, we had a poll this week.
Oh.
Yeah. So might as well talk. I thought I'd just do the one poll this week because you know I didn't want to. Just drown everybody in pointless questions.
What? Where are we going with this?
Just you wait. No. So we asked on the social media, out of these, which would persuade you the most to buy a ticket to a convention? Now, cause everyone has their own reasons, don't they, I guess? And yes, there's lots of different sort of reasons why you buy a ticket, but I just gave them four options because that's how I roll. First was comic guests. Then we had back issue comic traders, cosplay competitions, and travel distance.
Mm.
Now, I can tell you that two of these got a decent amount of votes, and two hardly got any.
Who voted for fucking cosplay? What wanker voted? Had one person vote cosplay, and I'm sure it was just to wind me up.
No, but there's lots of cosplayers out there, Tony, and like. They definitely come to conventions to, you know, dress up and
show off
what they're doing. And
have like, sex with each other in hotel rooms.
If there's a competition or a like True Believers has like the sort of catwalk, you know, where people who have made made costumes can come up and show off their work. That's totally relevant, I think.
You know, oh no!
If they're going to get a ticket and come through the door, why wouldn't they, Tony?
I think if you can pull them in on the cosplay and then get them into the comics, to be fair, I mean, I was never massively into the cosplay thing. It was something we knew we wanted to have because we knew it was a big part of the con, and it was something I also wanted. If we were going to do a big thing with it, it needed to be away from the main floor, not because we're hiding it as a dirty secret, but because I couldn't imagine anything worse than paying money for a table and then just having people posing for cosplay photos in front of my table all day.
Yeah.
Or in the case of another con that happens near us.
Vince Light's posing for cosplay photographs.
Yeah. Another con that happened near us that I won't name, but it rhymes with Gloucester Comic Con, ran their cosplay catwalk up and down the main aisle of the main hall, which they only had like one big aisle. So you just have all these people behind tables getting really pissed off because they were making no money for half hour to an hour.
Yeah, that's okay, because cosplay people tend to be quite cool people.
I will say, in their defence, they're probably some of the most passionate people I've ever met for they do. They really are into what they do. I mean,
them and the Westboro Baptist Church, I think, are two most passionate. Wait for the hate mail to roll in on that one.
Yeah.
I ain't touching that one.
To be fair, I've been part of that London Super Comic Con and Beyond group on Facebook. It's really interesting seeing people post up their stuff, cosplay stuff, like work in progress, and it's fascinating the work they put into it. I think that's what I admire out of it more than anything.
That's it, the commitment to do it and the commitment to actually get up in front of. It's like with our catwalk, we do it just for fun. We don't do it as a competition because I don't like competition. We do it as a thing that celebrates the community of cosplay. I'm not massively in, and it's mostly run by. I've set up a little group of cosplayers who run the hall for me. They just run everything by me, so I make sure it's not really anything against what we do. And
it's away from the main hall, isn't it?
My kids love it as well every year. They like to watch the cosplay catwalk show because to them they're seeing Spider-Man walk up and down a catwalk or they're not really associating it that it's somebody in the costume kind of thing, because they're at that age. And the first year, my son went back to school the day after the, well, the Monday after the event, and told everybody he met Batman at the weekend.
Oh, that's nice. That's cool.
And, you know, that was a really nice side of it. There is a dicky side to cosplay, you know. With everything, it's like, oh, you bought your costume, it's not real cosplay. It's like, fuck off, we don't want any of that shit. That's why we did it, as it is a thing about celebrating, whether you bought your costume, whether you've just thrown something together, whether you spent months working on it, whether you 3D printed your outfit.
Yeah, if you, if you're at a convention and there to have fun and you don't cause any shit with anyone, then it's all good, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's it.
We've become so nice.
Well, I feel like sometimes the rest of us have to be the good cop to your bad cop.
I say, I do understand why people don't like cosplay. I understand why certain artists don't like cosplay, but to me, it's somebody's way of interpreting the thing they love, and I can't really fault anybody for finding a way.
See, I will agree with you if they buy comics.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
If they are the cosplayers who come to it to buy comics, then I will 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
I think there are conventions now just for cosplayers, aren't there?
Yeah. There are, yeah.
And I think, if that's what they want to do, they do it. But, I think, and I'll probably get hate mail again for this, but I think there's quite a lot of them that don't, and I've been looking at them at the conventions for at least the last 5 years, and I very rarely see any of them buy a comic.
Well, the best one I saw was, I think it was something Gail Simone posted about somebody standing in front of her table as Batgirl, who had no idea that it was Gail Simone sat at the table behind her.
Yeah.
And given the stuff that Gail Simone did towards Batgirl, you'd think if you loved Batgirl enough to dress up as her, you'd have some idea who the really important people in the history of Batgirl were.
Yeah.
It's pretty damning, and they didn't.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, you know, you're out, you're having fun, fair enough. But as long as you don't piss people off, I've not really got an issue with it. Mm. But, I mean, I could fall into that, you know, you're not a real nerd because you can't name what's
going on. I'm not into that. Yeah, I'm just looking to protect comics. I'm just looking for people to be into comics and be into comic characters and read about them, because they will be enriched by it. They'll enjoy it and they'll get something out of it. But you only got to go to an MCM to see how many people are outside compared to how many people are inside, you know?
Yeah, the amount of cosplay photos you see come back from MCM, it's like, you were outside the event all day by the looks of this.
Yeah.
It's kind of, and I'm sure we get some people who just come for the cosplay hall, and that's fair enough. I mean, I'd like them to go around and pick up a comic and go around and look at some of the small press stuff.
Once, I mean, let's look at the basics of it. Once someone has paid their ticket and is through those doors, it's not your responsibility if they don't buy anything or if they just go through,
exactly.
You know, as soon as you've done your work by getting them there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think sometimes some conventions get a little bit of a hard rap. Like, if not everyone has a great time, you know, sales-wise at a convention, that doesn't necessarily mean that the convention's awful. I mean, it may put you off, like, rebooking next year, but that's just an individual's experience. I mean, I know
there's
myself.
There's a way to approach it as a table. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. There's a way to approach it as a table.
Mm.
Certainly from my side. I mean, we did, after the first or second year, we did a feedback form just to get feedback from people.
Mm.
And it was mostly useless, because it was either, oh, I love the event, it was great, don't change anything, which doesn't really, we can't develop from that.
Yeah.
And a lot of the negative stuff from people who had tables were like, I was sitting behind my table all day and people just kept walking by me. It's like, well, you were sitting behind your table. It's like, were you up? Were you interacting with people?
There's so many reasons for that, though, aren't they? It's not simply the convention or where your table is.
Or, you'll always get somebody who thinks that the person next to them had a better table because they took 50 quid more than me.
Yeah.
And it's not, and it's tricky, and it's something I always struggle with as to where I place people.
There's a million variables in that, and that's in comparison to how many shops in a high street make money and how many don't. You know, there's like a million different reasons.
Yeah. That's it. You know, and the only thing we do different is we charge £10 less for the table on the balcony because they're not on the main floor, and I appreciate that that isn't, you know, potentially could be perceived as not a good as good a spot as being down on the main floor.
That's a good spot. Tony will be sat there.
I'll be throwing things off the balcony.
Well, it's between the bar and the cosplay hall anyway, so they get a lot of foot traffic walking by.
Yeah.
it's not like it's a dead zone up there.
Mm.
Yeah, drunk cosplayers are my target audience. That's fine. Not selling comics, obviously.
But yeah, it's tricky. And I mean, I always feel horrible when people didn't have a good day money-wise. I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. Did you either connected with a lot of people but didn't make a lot of sales, but you've helped to build your audience a bit more.
Mm. Yeah.
Or, you know, you made a lot of sales, but you didn't really, it was only like two people to spend £100 on stuff. You didn't really connect with as wider audience. It's like, do you then write the cost of that table off as a marketing cost rather than a sales cost. It depends how you look at it. I think some people look at it as, I can go to this con, they're going to have this many people through the door, I will make a fortune. And they just sort of sit back and expect it to come to them.
Yeah, people say, oh, if every fifth person bought my comic, I'll be a millionaire. And it don't work that way.
No, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I understand, like, people like Sam Webster's not coming to True Believers this year because he didn't have a great year sales-wise last year, but he's also, I think, looked at it as kind of like, you know, he needs to take a year off to come back with new stuff potentially next year if he decides to.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. You've got to take you on the table, isn't it? Yeah.
I think sometimes taking a break, especially if you've not produced anything new, which I know Sam had a new comic out sort of later last year, but, or, you know, you've not produced a couple of new things. It was kind of like when I worked at HMV and they had the same HBO offer every year, and it's like, but there's no new titles in this offer, so why are we doing it? It's not pulling anybody in.
Yeah,
and
right.
If you've got a table and you're just selling, so to use you as an example, Vince, just say you only still had 3 issues of Red Mass from Mars and you've been peddling those for 3 years, you've kind of got to come to a point where you have to sort of think, do I take a year off from the convention circuit and go around and, you know, make some new work, and then come back on the convention circuit a year later with new, more varied stuff.
Yeah, I mean, because it does, you know, when you do have the same stock of something, it does take a toll on you. That's a bit of a dramatic way to put it. But when you are shilling the same thing over and over and over again, you know, even though, like, when I first did it, I had this big experience with issue one. You know, it was the first issue, so, you know, I was trying to get everywhere, you know, the new experiences.
Yeah.
And it's true, every convention I went to, that was a new audience. Do you know what I mean? That was people that hadn't seen it before. That's where you got to look at it. You go to these conventions because, you know, you may do two in a row, but the people that are on the second week haven't seen the comic as well. Everyone's a new reader. But when you're shilling it over and over and over again, it does get tiring by the end. You know, it's a marathon rather than a sprint, isn't it?
That's it, and especially with the way it runs now, there's a lot of people who go to like 4 or 5 conventions a year, and they will look out for you to pick up the next issue of Red Mask or something. And if they're coming to the fifth sort of one and you've still got the same thing for the third year in a row, they'll kind of like, once you've got something new, nobody will come to your table anymore because they're just like, they just have the same shit.
Yeah, and it's been nice to have a new issue like each year, and then when people come back, and I've had people come up and say, oh yeah, I wanted to pick this one up because I got their last issue last year. Do you know what I mean? That's the best thing ever, you know, when you get return business and you really enjoyed it. You know, you're doing something right, aren't you? Well, hopefully.
That's it. I mean, it's the same with us with organising it as well, both from people who've got tables who say it's like their favourite convention of the year, which, you know, I'm kind of like, are you sure?
And have faith in yourself, man.
I'm just very self-deprecating. I'm a big believer in Steal the Thunder.
The other thing I've noticed as well, Stuart, is you're kind of, there's a couple of different areas to small press in this country as well. You know, well, it's more than two, I expect, but you're sort of straddling both sides. So whilst you've got guests like Rachel Smith and Jessica Martin from the more sort of arty London side, you've also got the other side of more sort of adventure superhero driven comics as well. Was that something you set about doing, or?
I mean, with Rachel, pretty much blowing the load on my recommendations for later, but I really liked Rachel's style, and then I bought Rabbit.
Yeah.
After reading Rabbit, I was like, Rachel can come every year.
Right.
I'm so in love with her work.
Yeah. It has that kind of effect, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. It's kind of like, I will give her any money. She could ring me up and ask for a loan, and I'd probably give it to her just based on the strength of Rabbit.
Just in case she listens. Jesus.
That's all right. My wife is also an accountant, so she'll shut that shit right down. I can tell anybody I'll lend them money. It doesn't mean they'll get it.
I think we're interviewing her, aren't we? Isn't it Rachel and Chris?
Yeah, she's on the panel with you, yeah.
Yeah,
yes.
Chris Imber. Yeah,
we'll,
that'd be good.
We'll pick that up later on the show. Lovely. Back to the poll. I knew this episode would be one where we're just having fun, aren't we? You know,
there's just so many elements to talk about. I think a lot of people think a con is very, and depending on which one you go, it is very simple, somebody just throwing it together sort of thing.
Yeah. But there are lots of different factors to it, isn't there, really?
You know? There are, yeah. Yes. I think you can tell a con where the people who are organising it generally have a passion for it, and a con where people are just kind of like, these comics are popular at the moment, I can make some serious money.
Christ, yeah, there's a bit of that going on, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in fourth place with 1% was cosplay competitions.
Who the fuck voted?
That's a shock coming from.
That is 1% quite low. I was surprised at that. Yeah.
I kind of imagined it was Tony drunk just in
Why have I got this drunk conversation? I don't even drink.
Liar. Right, a third was, with 4%, was the back issue and comic traders.
I'm surprised.
Okay. Yeah. I almost pressed that one.
Because I was torn between, because I looked at the poll, because I got to click on an option, because I wanted to see how the poll was doing.
Yeah.
And I was torn between, to me, going to cons always used to be about going through long boxes.
Yeah.
Before the internet, that was the way to do it, and I deliberately don't tend to buy stuff online because I like the thrill of going through a long box. Yeah. To me, that's the closest I'll ever get to being Indiana Jones, is having to rummage through a long box and finding some treasure that I didn't know was missing or needed, or
avoiding a trap that could kill you. Yeah.
Oh, good man, me too. I've still got that notebook. Yeah, sitting in front of me now. Yeah.
So yeah, I thought I'd put the back issues in because I know what you mean. I love getting away from a table and just doing a bit of shopping. Do you know what I mean?
The downside of a con as well is you'll get people with comics from the 90s trying to charge you £2 for it. It's kind of like, this wasn't even worth £2 in the day.
No, yeah. But I think that's what's missing. I think a lot of conventions are missing that. It's a big factor for me is going to a convention and coming away with a bag full of comics, you know, very cheap comics,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's something we pushed for more this year. It's getting more and more back issue sellers in.
Right.
We've always been quite lucky. We've had quite a few. I know a lot of cons sometimes struggle to even get one person selling back issues. But certainly anything that goes back past a certain day. Because I'm big on nostalgia now. I've sort of hit that age where nostalgia for the cons used to be in my youth.
It's got to be Bronze Age for me. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's
90s for me, which I know is a lot of shit comics, but 90s Superman, 90s Batman, I absolutely adore. And Spider-Man 2099, all that stuff.
Yeah.
That was my era. Crack one of those open, and I'm right back on my bedroom floor reading comics again.
Yeah. Mark tweeted us, didn't he? With the Action Force comics.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he did send you that, didn't he? Yeah. Well, to be fair, I'm going to be talking, when I did interview Pat Mills in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be talking to him about Ravage 2099 and Punisher 2099, which he wrote. Yeah.
That's going to be good.
Yeah. Punisher 2099, so over the top, is fucking a masterpiece. It is,
And Ravage 2099, he drives around in a bin lorry.
Yeah.
His dad decided it was scary.
Yeah.
Wait, not it can wrong. Be.
It was UK reprints of Spider-Man 2099 that got me into that sort of stuff.
I was never
a big Marvel person, but something about Spider-Man 2099 had just instantly connected with me as a teen.
People love that series. You know?
Yeah. Did you have a little cheer when Marvel sort of brought him back then?
Recently. I did, and then they changed the costume and I died a little inside.
I've grown to like it. Foil cover,
A foil cover? You got to.
Yeah. They do a foil
in the 90s, I know, cover. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, who could believe it?
I feel like the first 10 issues of Spider-Man 2099 somewhere.
Did Rick Leonardi do some of that?
Yeah, he did.
David wrote some, I think. Yeah.
Classic.
Stuff.
In second place, with 30%, travel distance is the thing that would persuade people to buy a ticket.
Oh,
that's a big one for me.
Yes.
I can see that. It's, if you've got to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to get to a con, is it?
It can. I mean, that was the thing, the reason that I couldn't get to a lot of conventions, because it was travel or like the ease to get there.
Well, it's another reason before True Believers that I didn't really go to many cons, because once Bristol stopped, that was sort of the closest one we had that was a decent-ish comic con.
Yeah.
I mean, I know at a certain point they sort of strayed into the TV guests as well, but it was there I met Paul Griss for the first time and got him to sign a load of Jack Stamp stuff for me. And,
oh, cool. When were you doing Bristol?
Early 2000s, sort of 2003, 2004.
Oh, I had a table there then. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
You might well have strayed past. You might be one of the three people in the country who owned the comic series I did.
What was the comic series you did?
I'm not saying it on the air. I'll tell you later.
Is it the cat one?
It's the serial killer. Yeah.
So wasn't it number one?
I think I brought Tozza and that was it.
Oh god, yeah, I remember that.
Back issues, yeah.
It was great for back issues, Bristol, wasn't it? Really good.
It was superb and nice for statues as well. I got a couple of nice Batman statues from there as well.
But Marvel used to have a table there in DC, and you know
they did because Jim Lee was there the last year I went.
That's right, yeah.
Sort of before Jim Lee went big, because I just got him to sign a book for me and my brother-in-law, and then the queue to get a sketch was ridiculously huge, and my wife was kind of like, I'm trying to get bored of this shit now.
Yeah.
I've kind of supported you, but I'm not standing in a queue for two. Yeah. Especially if she knew I'd kind of be like, can you hold my spot while I just run off over it? Because I'm that kind of charming gentleman.
So, yeah, travelling distance. There's a couple of people who had replies about it as well. I know Gareth Hopkins said, if the con's going to involve an overnight stay, it's unlikely to happen. Except if I'm tabling, that is. I think that's pretty standard across the board, isn't it? Dan, you don't get a chance to go to many conventions, do you?
No, yeah, I'm down in Kent, so kind of like it's a bit of a boot for me.
Yeah.
I cap it about 6 hours. If it's a 6 hour round trip, I'm off. I fucking hate driving as well.
There's nothing worse after a con than trying to drive home. You're just tired. You've got the feel of the con on you. Just kind of.
I quite like staying overnight if I'm just wandering around it. It's quite nice. Because you can sort of go back to your room, leave your bag, you know, go back, buy some more back issues, load them in the car. I like all that, actually. And then in the morning, if you've got a hotel near the convention, you normally walk in for breakfast and there'll be someone sitting there you can chat to, you know. I quite like that. Yeah.
Tony's that bloke that you see walking about.
Yep.
Just walking up and down the street.
Let's come and see you at breakfast. Yeah.
Now, number one choice was, of course, with 64%, was comic guests. I think that's... I knew that was...
For me, it depends who they are, though.
Yeah.
If they're the ones that I could quite happily see at any convention I always go to, you know, then I'm not overly fussed. I'd be more interested in walking and looking at the back issues. But if they've got someone who's unusual and you don't really see often...
Yeah.
And I haven't seen much of, then that would be more of something for me to go for it, you know.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
A lot of our replies to this poll were about the comic guests. For instance, Lee Grice at lovely Lee_G, he said, I voted comic guests, but specifically in regards to guests active in panels and talks rather than just selling and signing. Simon Russell at Simon at Boeing, similar sort of thing. Comic guests means talks and events, not signings for me. Fred McNamara at Capitan_Mac. He said a con filled with indie creators is like hitting the jackpot for me. Meeting these folks face to face is just lovely.
God.
I'd agree with that to a degree, potentially more than sort of the quote unquote big name guests sometimes is.
Yeah.
The second page, I'll look at. The guest is usually the first thing you'll see, and usually with most of them you have to scroll through X amount of actors before you find the comic guest.
Yeah.
But I also check the small press presence, because certainly in more recent years I've sort of been swayed more into small press through meeting people like John Locke and Nick Ainge and that, who were big in helping us with setting up True Believers, and we always said we wanted True Believers to be a community event for the small press as well as the comic community as a whole. We wanted to be a hub. I mean, that was a big thing with setting up the website, is we wanted it to promote small press as well.
Yeah.
And finding ways of doing it that we're not just shilling our event, we're shilling for other people as well. So we do like the 5-question interview, that sort of thing. Just little things that are bite-sized things that people can just quickly look at, get an idea of the people, and then decide whether they want to sort of seek them out or not. Based on that, or you loved Batman Nightfall, I loved Batman Nightfall, I'm going to stop by your table and have a chat about it.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah,
and that sort of thing. And a lot of these websites are sort of like, these are our guests, and we got some small press people. Like, but who?
Yeah,
I think you've got. I think you've got to do both. I'll be honest with you, Stuart. The way I feel, and I go to quite a lot of conventions every year, is I think that events are just purely one or the other. So if it's just pros, then it's like they'll all go off to the pub together.
Yeah.
And if it's just small press, it becomes a bit of a club.
Oh yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, that's why. Yeah. Always wanted to walk the line.
You've got to mix and match it up, you know. I think London last year was great because we sat amongst professionals and small press and that sort of thing, and you know, you don't feel like you're just in a sort of small press area, you know, with the same people you see every year.
Mm. That's one of the things we sort of took a bit of shit for from some people, was that we didn't group all the small press together, we didn't group all the exhibitors together, we didn't group all the traders together. It's like, but if you're not into small press, you're just going to go straight to the traders and ignore everything else. If you've got a trader next to a small press person, you might catch their eye, and you might be like, "Oh, what is this red mass from Mars?" And they'll sort of stroll away from the long boxes and have a look and have a chat with you about it, and potentially walk away with something new.
And plus small press, but traders don't buy off each other. But if you put a load of long boxes next to me, you know, I've got a table at a convention, I'll buy some comics off them as well.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a sort of, you got a spread bet, I think, haven't you? You know,
yeah, that's it. And I mean, there's pluses and negatives for all of it. And you, at the end of the day, you've got to do what you'd like to see from a con. Yeah. Take feedback as much as possible, but at the end of the day, it is your vision of what a Comic-Con should be, if it's something you're passionate about. So yeah. That's the way we set it up, the way we set up the floor plan and that sort of thing. And we do mix it. This year, we've done a little bit more with getting the small press a bit closer together, but we've still got other people mixed in with it. And we've got the exhibitors a bit more towards the back of the room. Just because I think seeing all the art up together like that, it looked really nice.
Yeah. Right.
And it's just, it's trial and error. Like I say, this first 5 years is sort of, it's like one long pilot season kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of trial and error. Nothing gets it right till the third season, they reckon, do they, on TV? So, that's it. So, you know, yeah.
So, okay. Yeah.
This year's the year.
So there must be all this sort of peripheral stuff you have to take a hit for as well, like, is there food? Is there someone you can sit and read your comics? Is there somewhere, you know, the cosplayers can get changed? You know, there's lots of different stuff, isn't there, like that as well?
That was another thing with choosing the venue, because when we spent about a year and a half in the run-up to, I think it was about a year in the run-up to launching the Kickstarter, and then we had a year, pretty much a year from the Kickstarter ending to the event happening.
Right.
Because we didn't overly have a massive clue what the fuck we were doing, and we knew we didn't. We were just cherry-picking from other events and from memory of events we liked. And one of the things that took a long time to do was finding the right venue, because we didn't want to be, we didn't want to be a leisure centre event. Nothing against them. We didn't want to be a town hall event. We wanted to be... We were kind of got to the point where it was like, if we're going to do it, we either go big or we go home.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So finding a venue like that. And the racecourse was the place for it, because we could have the separate cosplay hall. We had the balcony where people could just go and take a load off and just sit down and relax. And we had the bar where they served food, which they screwed us on 2 years, but this year's the year where they're going to get it right.
Is it?
It is, because it cost them money this time from them screwing me 2 years in a row, so they're pretty much making sure they've got ridiculous amounts of food in.
Yeah. And also, if you're an exhibitor, be sure to take snacks. I mean, this never mind True Believers, but just conventions in general. Because sometimes you don't get a chance to get away from your table, so always have supplies with you.
You'll have a spare packet of Wotsits, won't you, under your table?
Always, yeah. Always. I've got my sharing Wotsits. Communal Wotsits is what I call them.
To be fair, if you're absolutely desperate, a decent con organizer will have food in the green room or the staff area where all the volunteers go to get something. They can easily run and grab you a cake bar or something.
Oh, cake bar. Sign me up.
No,
that only applies to certain people. Fuck, we're going to run out of food.
Yeah, don't say that live on air. Yeah, Vince has already put himself down for eight.
I ran a poll on Twitter. I went off reservation and did a poll on my own. After seeing a post in another Facebook group, creators group, and essentially this chap hadn't got into convention because his work was kind of like, they didn't think it was a high enough quality. So he was saying, oh, how would people feel if I bought a ticket and walked around the convention selling out my bag?
Yeah, I remember this.
And I put a poll up how people would feel. And generally, people were relatively apathetic, but a lot of people were saying this goes completely against the terms and conditions of most conventions. And I imagine most people, if you were running a table and some guy came up and tried to flog out of his bag in front of your table, you would get fucked off.
Yeah,
but presumably that goes against your...
You can't just pitch up and start selling shit.
No,
you have to have a table. I mean, one thing we do that's possibly different to others is that we just put the tables up for sale. Mm. This year we've broken down to actually having separate small press ones because we were getting to a point where it's like, I sell jewellery. And it's kind of like, look, we can't... You walk a fine line between art prints and jewellery, you become more of a craft fair than a comic convention. We wanted to have a dedicated certain number of tables that were for small press or so small press artists, so we broke those down like that, and it's something we're trying to... I've got nothing against the jewellery. It's fine. People like it. People sell it, and there's a lot of skill that goes into making some of it, and some of it is very cool comic book themed jewellery.
Yeah.
But I don't want a floor full of it.
Yeah, I agree.
And a thing we've had a couple of years is just people pitching up and their table looks like a jumble sale.
Yeah.
This is tap we found when we were clearing out a lockup.
Yeah. I mean, do you check people coming in, because I've seen stuff going to cons and essentially they're just banging out prints of...
We don't have a large number of volunteers or agents, as we call them, but they're keen at spotting that sort of stuff and, you know, moving people. I mean, it's an instant thing. Anything like that, you're just out. No refund, yeah, right? Just out. So the same with anybody that's kind of like,
oh, mate, sorry,
getting in the way of somebody's pitch from the table next to them. Got zero tolerance for that as well. It's just a dick thing to do.
Have you had experience of that happening?
Touch wood, we've not had anything like that happen. Mm. The first year we had an issue where people didn't have their lanyards on their table, so they were taking them off other people's tables, which was just a ball-egg thing, but we just couldn't police it.
Yeah,
right. It was a nightmare, because I naively was like, these people are trustworthy, I can put the stuff on their tables and no one will nick it, and they did.
You can't trust anyone. That's what we've learned. After 82 episodes, you can't trust anyone.
So, I mean, that was a learning curve for us, so... Now everything's in a little safe and you have to crack the code on your table to get it. So.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
It's like Crystal Maze, if you fail, you're locked into your table.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Good luck, Vince.
Oh, thanks. Is Richard O'Brien going to run past with a harmonica? Anyway.
Steve Merchant.
Well, yeah. See what he did there. Right. Of course.
So what was the result of your poll then, Dan?
Well, essentially, yeah, people were kind of a bit... It was all over. I think gave four options, and most people weren't too bothered by it. But
right,
I think if you were going around and talking to people saying, "Oh yeah, I do this comic," blah 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 blah, and say, "I've got one on me if you want," but kind of trying to set up a bit of a kind of Del Boy style pitch.
Yeah, I think it's a fine line.
I think people aren't bothered about it until it happens in front of them, and then they've got a real problem with it.
When I get it occasionally, where people say, "Oh, you know, I'm going to be at a convention. I'll have 10 comics with me. Did you want one?" And I go, yeah, give me a bell when you get there. Well, that's all right, isn't it? But if you're just stopping people in the aisle and going, look at these comics, you know, then that is, I think, a little bit naughty.
I said, there's a difference between networking and...
Yeah. I know a lot of people say, oh, you get chatting to them and they go, what are you into? And you say, I'm into the X-Men. And they go, I do an X-Men fanzine. And you say, oh, did you want to buy one? I say, oh, yeah, well, actually. You know, it's like that, that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
And, you know, you've got to admire that in a way. But yeah, I know what you mean. There is walking around with like one of those things they used to sell ice creams in the cinema with loads of comics. Yeah, that's a bit out of order, isn't it? But yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it's an idea for next year, Stu. Yeah. You could charge them for that.
I could do, yeah.
The ice cream vendors, amazing. We had a couple of questions about convention organising and such. So the first one.
I'm out then.
Oh, God. Anyone can answer. Just in case we get dead air. Tom Curry at This Chucklehead, he said, what is the rationale or choice between doing a 1 or 2 day convention?
For us, personally, I've just never felt we've put anything on that warranted being 2 days.
Yeah.
I think there's a thing with a lot of cons where they're like, we're a 2 day event, which is great if you can't make the Saturday, but a lot of them then sort of lag on the Sunday anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you've got to have enough interesting stuff going on 2 days to warrant people wanting to go 2 days.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I know there are people that will turn up for 2 days just to stand in the corner and have a chat. And that's absolutely cool, but it doubles the cost for everybody getting a table. They then have to pay accommodation to stay overnight and everything. And I just don't feel at the moment for us personally that we're in a position where we can justify running 2 days. Certainly, potentially at the end of the 5 years, and I know the venue are constantly like, are you ready to move up to 2 days yet? It's like, no.
Yeah, I think it needs to be a big venue with loads. Like, I can see why, you know, London Super Comic Con is 2 or 3 days. I can see that because it's a big old venue and they can show films and have talks in various rooms and stuff like that.
If we get to the position where we can expand to use the whole venue that we've got, then potentially it would be worth looking at moving up to 2 days. But at present, it's kind of like my problem with modern comedy films. Is I miss the days of the hour and a half comedy movie where I was like, I really enjoyed that. I wish it had gone on a little bit longer. Now you get the 2 hour ones and you're like, I wish that was a half hour shorter.
Yeah, right.
And I don't want to be the con equivalent of that. I was like, it was good, but it really sort of. We used to have fantasy films
that were an hour and 20 minutes, hour and 30 minutes long. Now it's like 3 hours.
3 hours. Because Lord of the Rings is 3 hours, so everything can be 3 hours.
Yeah.
And it's like, I get cons that do it for 2 days if they've got like a great selection of guests that they just want to get them all up on the panels. And that is sort of my one regret with being 1 day, is that we don't get as many of the people that we've got there up on panels as we'd like to. We try and get at least one person on each panel. But even that's not possible sometimes, because we'd like to have one panel that's dedicated to small press, which is our Discover Something New panel.
Yeah.
So this year it's John Late, Chris Sides, Jay Martin, and that. And they're up and they're talking about, at the time they were close to immortality, but now they're just their own collective thing, and they're going to be talking about their work.
In a minute, actually.
So, and and we try and do that every year, where a small press one, and you know, sometimes a good amount of people turn up to it. Sometimes you've got about 4 or 5 people sitting in the front row, but they still deliver the panel. Whoever's on that panel still deliver, and then
you still got to
the
go
right
for
frame
it,
of mind that they're like, I'm still reaching 5 new people.
Can't punish.
Do you want to run through what? Do you want to run through what the panels are, Stu? Or
We've got the first one, especially for you. It's the Celebrate Cosplay panel.
Brilliant, I'll be there.
Which this year is all about, like, cosplayers learning how to network and that sort of thing and put themselves out there.
Cool.
Which, apparently that's a thing, so...
I'm saying fuck all.
But it's good. Like I say, there's a lot of skill that goes into the way they make their costumes and the way they inhabit the characters. The ones that do it well do it really well, and I can't fault them. There's also the ones that just all show up in a Punisher t-shirt and that's their thing, and that's also cool if that's what they want to do. But it is, like I say, it's I'm not gonna slag off cosplay.
What's the second one? What is that one?
It's the Transformers panel, so we're looking at because we've got Andrew Wildman, John Paul Bove, and Jack Lawrence, so you've got three generations of people who worked on Transformers comics there. It seemed like the obvious panel to do, really, and I grew up on those Transformers UK comics.
Yep.
It was nothing more exciting than running up to the newsagents to get that pretty much every one.
And they're very popular at the moment because they got those magazine, the hardbacks coming out.
We got in touch with them and said, do you want to do something with it? Because it's a great part where they've got running as well. I got the trial issues and I've just subscribed properly.
Right.
Again, a lot of nostalgia coming back from it as well. Very much nostalgia.
I think, is it Simon Furman? I think, didn't he do...
He's doing all introductions.
Leamington last year.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, they did one at Leamington. It was him and Andrew Wildman on that one, I think.
Right, yeah.
So, but yeah, and with 30th anniversary of the movie and...
Is it really 30 years? God.
Yeah, I know.
I got that on the animated
I got the record
of
that.
I remember going to the cinema. But yeah, so we've got that, and like I say, that'll just sort of look at the history of Transformers in comics and all that sort of thing, because it's amazing how long that's lasted and lived. Given that it was largely dismissed as a toy commercial in the 80s. But I think
they're still
the
going now. IDW are killing it at the moment, this revolution thing they've got going on. Yeah.
I've got the first issue of Lost Light, which is what Jack Lawrence has just started on, which John Paul Cove is working on as well. And that's really good so far. And it's... Sometimes you get with the Transformers comics, a lot like the Michael Bay films, you're like, which fucking robot am I looking at now?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. But, did you read Transformers G.I. Joe? That looked crazy good.
I didn't. Was that the recent one or the Tom one Scioli that used to do back in Marvel UK?
No, the Tom Scioli, the sort of trippy
one. Yeah, no, I missed that one. I sort of... The worst thing about running a con is I don't get to read as many comics as I used to.
Right, okay.
I always remember the one from school, the rhyme. It's Transformers, your mum is a guy. All these years, that stuck on me.
Stuck on you.
There's a Transformers comic that traumatised me as a kid. I think it was in one of the annuals, but it's where Starscream's got Megatron's cannon on his arm, and Grimlock goes in to bite it, and he just shoots Grimlock through the back, through the mouth, out the back of the head. Me as an 8-year-old just rocking.
There is one I always remember. There's like Ultra Magnus and a couple of them, and they end up in a city where basically like zombie dead Transformers are coming back to life. And I was like, I didn't expect to see this in a story. It's like the city of Canis or Tanis or
Those Marvel UK ones are really fucking dark.
Yeah.
Action Force one was really dark as well. Here's a character you love. Watch us kill him in this comic.
Really well respected, though, still, aren't they? I mean, they held the best, the title for the best Transformers comics, Marvel UK, for years, didn't they, I think?
I think they're massively ahead of their time in what they were doing as well.
Yeah.
You look at kids' tie-in comics now, which some of them are great, and some of them are very much you just sort of flogging the horse of what I watched on telly kind of thing.
Yeah,
they don't develop the story. They either adapt an episode, or the Turtles comic, the Archie one in the 90s, was guilty of that.
Right, okay.
Maybe in the UK, were we buying toys off the strength of the comic as opposed to the cartoon, because we was a bit behind on that?
Might be, mightn't it? Yeah.
Mm, yeah, it was definitely the cartoon came first, and then you get the toy, wouldn't you?
I remember my dad used to go to the video shop every school holiday, and we'd pretty much get the same Transformers video out. pretty much the only one they had left in. And it was that. So the only way that I sort of Transformers grew for me was through the comics and then the movie, and then eventually Sky came in and they started showing the cartoons like that. But it's not right. like it is now, where you're kind of like, I really want to watch Transformers. I'll just nip down the shop or pop on Amazon and buy the box set.
For sort of three weekends in a row, we and my brother rented out Big Trouble in Little China. And on the fourth, my dad's like, we're not getting this again. For the news agent.
What's wrong with you?
See, we were like that with Ewok's Battle for Endor. So.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah. Dan hasn't spoken to his father since then. That.
No.
Well, there's just no excuse not to run Big Trouble in Little China.
Very true. Crackerjack timing, as Tony says.
Yeah.
So that's the Transformers panel. What have we got after that?
Then next we got the Discover Something New, which is with, like I say, the Close to Immortality guys, or I'm not sure what collective name they're calling themselves now.
I don't think they have a collective. I was out on the piss with them last night. I don't know if they have quite done that.
The last thing I had from him was, or about, with regard to Close to Immortality, was like they were going to form their own super team alliance kind of thing.
Mm, right, okay.
And I didn't know whether they'd given it a name or whether they were just going on individually but working under a collective banner. So which meant we lost the name for Discover Something New. So.
Right, okay.
So I need to give them like a Three Amigos or something, kind of.
Yeah, something sexy.
Just to sell it. then after that, we've got the Comics as Education panel, which is the Inside the Artist Studio one.
Oh, we spoke about this. Apologies about that. Sorry about that. I was going to help out, wasn't I? But I'm getting off a plane that morning, so I can't be certain I'll be there for it. But yeah.
Back to Alabama.
Sorry, mate.
So you're back to Alabama, right?
Yeah. quick flight over there just for a couple of hours.
But yeah, no, with that one, we've got Des Taylor, Dylan Teague, Jessica Martin, and Ben Oliver. And it's sort of them talk about their process for creating art, what inspires them to create it, how they sort of go, how they hone their skills. I know, like, Dylan Teague seems to do a lot of life drawing at the moment.
Okay, interesting.
Which Andy, who's involved in True Believers, he's big into life drawing at the moment, just for improving his skills as an artist and that. And it's something that's always fascinated me, because I'm a casual artist. I'm not a, you know, hardcore professional artist or anything like that. But sort of finding out how people do things has always sort of interested me.
Okay. Would you ever consider like a life drawing event at one of yours? Or
we've got one of our workshops is one of our featured cosplayers is gonna. She's Hawkeye.
Okay.
Female Hawkeye, whose name's just left me at the minute.
Kate.
Kate. Yeah. Kate.
Yeah, can't remember the surname.
Oh, for the life of me. Damn it, can't remember.
But yeah, anyway, we're doing like a short half an hour one.
Right, okay.
Just sort of test the water on it. Yeah. And seems to be a lot of interest in it, which is good.
Yeah, because I know the 2000 AD event, they're doing, Adam from Orbiting Pod is hosting it, and they're doing all the cosplayers who are in 2000 AD, you know, costumes will be doing life drawings. So you've got Strontium Dog and Judge Dredd. That sounds cool as well. I like that idea. Yeah,
Kate Bishop. That was it.
Kate Bishop. Well done.
Yeah, it's just something a little different, and off the back of that panel, it seemed like a natural thing to have in it as well.
Yeah.
I to see people starting to create things actually at the event, I get a bit kick out. So
yeah.
Mm. So yeah, and like I say, anything that sort of inspires people to take the skills that those people use, or just go off and try and find their own thing. I think the worst thing you can do is follow exactly what somebody else does. I've always said, with regard to filmmaking or anything like that, or writing a comic, cherry pick the stuff that will work for you. Because you can't completely change your mindset on how you want to do something just because it worked for somebody else. You can try it. If it doesn't work, cherry pick what came from it and go that way, and that's how you create and find your own style.
Yeah.
To me, it's sort of the advice I've always given to people who've asked, and very few people ask me for advice anymore, but
I'm going to ask you for some later.
I seem to be turning more and more into Larry David as each passing day goes by.
Yes, we talked about this the other day. He's our hero, isn't he? Yeah, definitely.
So I mean well, but it's why I'm painfully poor over an email I send sometimes. This sounds friendly. being red on the other end.
I've found that making use of a lot of emojis helps the fact that I don't sound like quite a wanker, quite the wanker.
Yeah, I just, fundamentally opposed to emojis, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I just say, look, inside every time I have to put one on.
I know, me too, but rather than just saying, I'll get on with it, you wanker, I have to put like a smiley face and a thumb or something, and then it comes across a lot better.
Or a finger in a donut.
If you stick a low at the end, that just rounds the edge off of everything.
Yeah, like, OMFG, I put it sometimes. I like
get the fucking work done, lol.
But yeah, I got a couple of friends who completely get my humour, and then there's a lot who don't. It's like one of my friends, she posted a picture on her Facebook page the other day of like her with all makeup on and that. And he was like, oh, you look lovely, you look beautiful. I just put underneath, oh, what the fuck is that? And I was like, I shouldn't have done that, because she'll get it. But everyone else will be like, why are you being such a freaking troll?
There's a woman at work who started a rumour I had a tail recently. So I started a rumour she was a female ejaculator. It's just sort of snowballing, to be fair.
Can't see this
somebody's
game
going
wrong.
On a course soon.
Yeah.
Oh dear. So yeah, so the panels, it looks like a good day of panels, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, we streamlined it a bit, because we usually do 6 and I've scaled it back to 5 so we can put more focus into the ones we've got on, rather than it sort of being a rush, kind of like just as it's getting into it, you're like, well, we're out of time.
Yeah.
What do you think is going to be the worst one,
Jim? Probably the last one.
Yeah. Bearing in mind, I'll be off an overnight flight, so I'm going to be mental at this point and just weird. Vince will be trying to claw back any C words that I drop constantly during the conversation.
I'm just going to go around everybody being like, get your top 10 shits list ready.
Yeah, this that'll bring out.
To be fair, I think it'll do really well, because I think the making comics idea is going to be of interest to a lot of people that are going.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
At the risk of bigging it up to the... I think there's 3 people there. And they're all on the panel.
But to be fair, Rachel and Chris are big draws. So
yeah, they are. Both of them are. Yeah, and good talk as well.
And they've got you know, they've got wildly different sort of experiences of starting in comics and like experiences, you know, and everything they do. Different styles, like you were saying. You know, Rachel's in that sort of more artsy side, whereas Chris Imber's got like, you know, the big bombastic action books. But they're both really funny and really nice people, and they're willing to put up with us.
Fuck me. Here we go.
So hopefully, I mean, obviously, we're going to be talking about like making comics and different hints and tips and you know, lots of questions from the audience, etc. And hopefully, I'll be able to stop it going completely off the rails.
And if you shout pork pie, I'll have a prize for you.
Yes. It'll be another the awesome
pork pie.
The pork pie competition. I think that should be ongoing, shouldn't it? Every time we have a panel. Yeah. If anyone
work in pork pie into the shout it out.
Yeah. But
should we say work it into a question? If you can work, when we open up for questions, if you can work pork pie into your question, you'll win a prize. How's that?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Because and
you're
it has
get a
to,
lot of Desmond's fans coming in.
Yeah. Classic.
Yeah,
I'd love it if the first person like, would you be willing to read my Desmond's fan comic? This issue focuses on pork pie.
Yeah, so that would be interesting. So when the panel's up and running, we don't want anything before we start. But yeah, and when it comes to the questions, if you can sneak pork pie in, you'll win a prize.
One guy at the back of the room to show
pork pie.
Going higher at the end, so it sounds like a question. Pork pie?
Yeah. Now, do we tell Chris and Rachel that it's going to happen, or should we leave them to discover it on the day?
Leave it
in the dark. You'll find out whether they listen to this or not then.
We'll do. They're proper friends. Yeah.
So we're hugely looking forward to it, and you know, like, hopefully you lovely people will be able to, those who can't make it to True Believers on the day, hopefully we'll be able to get the audio.
Fuck them.
Yeah, if you can't make it, then we don't want to talk to you, ever. You're dead to us.
Yeah, please.
I'm loading this podcast.
So we may be able to get the audio of that as well. So watch this space.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Well, hopefully. We don't know what the panel's going to be like yet.
It's in the name. You can't really not deliver
on that. Let's not
it can only be better than the last attempt we had at it. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was copious swearing then as well.
Yeah, that was all me again, wasn't it? I'm afraid.
It was, yeah. essentially, I have to be your wrangler, don't I, Tony?
Be careful how you say that.
What are you doing? I'm wrangling Tony. Oh, you're what?
An image of you stood there like Chris Pratt in Jurassic World.
To be honest,
I'm just going to be so knackered, it's like probably tripping. I'm just going to be convinced that you're somebody else and just dive on you and wrestle you.
Yeah.
And whilst you're trying to ask them questions, I think that's going to be a good style.
Yeah. It'll be more like the dinosaur, the raptor handler from the original Jurassic Park, going, "Shoot him! Shoot him!" Oh dear. Yes. So it should be another fun day. Anyway, right. We've got another question.
Oh.
Last one. Alan Henderson. Good old Alan Henderson.
Yeah.
At Shadow 1972, he says, "How do you decide the timetable for opening table bookings? Some shows are 6 months, some are 3 months, etc."
Completely trial and error. After the first one, we opened the table bookings pretty much straight after the event ended.
Mm-hmm.
And then other time, this last year, we sort of waited about 6 months before to open up the table bookings. Like I say, it's completely trial and error. We seem to get more success from doing it pretty much straight away.
Oh, really?
I think while the event was fresh in people's minds.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it's a regular who's like, "I want to come back, but I can't afford to pay for the table at the moment, can you hold it for me until X date?" Then we've got no problem with doing that. We don't tend to do it for new people, but for people who've been with us for the previous years who want to come back, we completely understand, especially if you're self-publishing your own small press sort of title or something like that.
Yeah.
The funds aren't there to instantly jump back into the following year's show.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think about when you actually open up the gates as well? Because I know, for instance, London Super Comic Con and now Thought Bubble have opened up fairly close to one another. I mean, London Super Comic Con was in the lead up to Christmas, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which is obviously quite difficult when you want people to pay immediately to get their table. That can be quite hard for some people. Yeah. Do you factor that in when you announce like table booking openings, the actual timing in the year?
We do. I mean, the problem with being first in the year is sort of if you leave it till 6 months or even 3 months before, you're sort of in the midst of the big small press shows. So yeah. Like your Thought Bubbles and that sort of thing. The top back end of the year with Ice and Nice and all of those cons, it's very heavy comic focus towards the end of the year. I mean, we're fairly lucky with being in February. We're sort of, especially with London Super Comic Con moving, that we're very much on our own now, our own island of comic focused.
Yeah, you're first out of the blocks, and you know it's getting a lot of buzz because you're the first one of the season.
Which is a double edged sword at the other end of it, because then people go off and enjoy other cons and sort of forget about us a little bit, and it's not until
right.
We get to the next one that people are, "Oh fuck yeah, True Believers."
Yeah, yeah.
So it's sort of a double edged thing, which again is where we trial and error doing things differently. Like this year we're going to trial launching tickets for 2018 the day after this one ends at a special reduced price.
Oh really?
Just to see how that goes. Like I say, it doesn't overly affect anybody. The one thing we won't do is put tickets are £10 and then do a weekend where we reduce the price of the tickets.
Yeah.
Or
okay.
Reduce the tickets as it gets closer, because to me, you're pissing off the people that are supporting you from the beginning.
Yeah, it's better the other way around, isn't it? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a few people have been like, "Why don't you ever do a weekend where your tickets are this price?" It's like, because then I feel bad for the people that are like, "I bought a ticket at full price this yesterday. You're doing it at this price today. You pricks! I will never come to your show again."
Most
events is it starts out cheaper and then gets more expensive the closer to the day.
Yeah, that's what 2018 did this year, didn't they?
Yeah,
I think it's respecting the people that are coming to your event. I think that's a big thing. Again, it's where it shows from an event that is just in it for the money to an event that is in it because they have a genuine love for what they're doing and the people that are coming along to the event.
Yeah.
And I think that really shows in the way that they sell tickets, the way that they promote the event, the way that they, even with regard to what they have at the event, with regard to signage. We put a lot of money back into, I mean, we've been fairly lapsed on signage the last couple of years. We always thought we had enough, but it seems like you can never have enough.
Yeah, people are going to be like Bugs
Bunny with signs, just pointing to signs.
People do moan about that, don't they? Oh, I couldn't find the door. You know, and all this sort of thing, don't they, sometimes?
Yeah. I mean, the first year, we were kind of like, do we need signs sort of going up the stairs? It's like we've got signs pointing to the stairs, but do we need to go beyond that?
Yeah.
People then connect the two from there. It's like, I can see the balcony, I can see the stairs, but I don't know how they connect. And it's kind of like, I mean, we looked at it this year, we were going to be kind of like, you know, we're just going to blitz it with signs that will literally be a sign next to a sign. And I was like, but then you just... you have the counter thing. I mean, the big thing we've invested in is signs for outside. So we've invested in a big banner to go above the entrance. We've invested in banners to go through the car park pointing you towards the doors. And then inside the event, we're investing in getting a bit more signage up than that. And I've been to cons where there's just nothing. There's a tiny little bit of card outside that tells you that this is such and such Comic-Con. And you kind of only see it once you've got to the front of the queue. And then once you get inside, there's nothing telling you what's where. And I'm not so much about who's at what table, because I think half the fun of a con sometimes is wandering around and finding people that way.
Yeah.
Rather than having a map. I think you should have a map up on the wall, but not necessarily a map that you hand out to people.
Some people like to spot, especially the bigger ones, they like to spot where, you know, the American or the European guest is, and then they can just leg it in and just sort of table hug, you know, sort of thing. Yeah.
It's usually the guy with like 20 books.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But I mean, we're not really that kind of event, to be fair, where it is, you know, I'm going to get this night stuff signed. It is, a lot of the feedback we get is that people like this relaxed enough that they can have a chat with somebody without feeling like they're getting in the way of somebody else wanting to buy, and without the person behind the table feeling like they're getting pissed off with this conversation.
Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of people that wander around constantly, Dan Butcher has to leave us for this episode.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dan.
his
we're talking
bowels...
about losing listeners. We're losing a host.
Yeah, his bowels have finally given in,
which is why I'm here.
Yeah, we are going to be interviewing for Dan's replacement as soon as he's done.
No, never say that.
Cheers, Tony.
Thank you, mate.
No, Dan, you can never be replaced.
No,
thank you.
Until next week. So, Dan, do you want to leave our lovely listeners with any messages before you go?
I'm going to be doing a shout out to a excellent Kickstarter. I'll stick it on the Awesome Comic pod page, but
real
Vanguard launches issue 13 launches on Friday, so go check that out.
Brilliant,
there you go.
Back on last.
Yeah, looking to see that. Yeah,
right, take care, fellas. I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, I'll speak to you later. Yeah,
see
you.
Bye.
Bye.
Right, now he's gone. Let's slag him off.
Yeah, let's slag him off. What dirt have we got on him, Tony?
Dan will fucking kill you.
Fair enough. He's a lovely bloke.
He has
strong, near a word said against him.
He has strong, manly hands. He's killed before, and he will kill again. Yes, thank you very much, Dan, for joining us this week. I hope saving all those people, all those cats that are up the trees, goes well.
And I hope murdering everyone at Southern Rail also goes well.
Yeah, that's true. Don't get him started. Do not get him started. So basically, True Believers, would you say you're 2 weeks away as we're speaking now? You're pretty much almost sorted for the day. Have you got to a point where you're feeling comfortable and confident? Or are you drinking
daily? I
never
feel comfortable and confident. But it's the underwear I wear, unfortunately.
Oh, Tony, you wear underwear.
Wear underwear, weirdo.
Wait, no. This is where I'm going wrong. We sit on me nuts, if not. So. True believers. This year, fortunately, with changing jobs, I'm a bit more on top of where I would be. Because usually I had like 3 days before the event, and that's when I sort of cramming in, getting the last sort of jobs done, or sitting up till 3 o'clock in the morning finishing everything. Yeah. A bit more relaxed, so I'm putting the finishing touches to the extras that we do.
Yeah.
So just the things that nobody will ever really notice on the day, but it keeps it running smoothly. People don't complain about it, and just like the little touches we like to do for people who've got tables and that sort of thing.
Okay.
It's going to be a fun day, and we're certainly looking forward to it. You know, first.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I really am. I liked it. I had great fun last year.
Yeah.
Although it was the wettest day of the year. Terrible, wasn't it? I remember. Yeah.
That's one of the reasons we didn't bother doing feedback last year, because we the two companies, the weather and the venue, ran out of food, both of which we had no real control over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the food we will take responsibility for, because at the end of the day, although it was the venue's fault, you just sound like you're being like, it was their fault. Yeah.
I was driving home after the event, and I remember one of my headlights went out. and it was chucking it down, and I was on the most. I was driving like an old person. Do you know what I mean? Because the rain was so hard, you couldn't see. You know, even your wipers were essentially rendered pointless. So that was fun, but the rest of the day was great.
Yeah, we had a great time otherwise. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was the big unfortunate thing last year, is that quite a few of the tables just didn't show up because they like got partway there and then had to just turn back.
Oh God, really?
Right. Oh really? Wow. Okay.
Because there's quite a few people coming from quite a distance away. Yeah. It's like, you know, right. I can't fault people for that.
Yeah.
Need to get a pair of bollocks, don't they? What's wrong?
I have to tell Tony.
I think I'm a man on the edge today, aren't I?
You give people
a lot this year.
Yeah, you give people a lot of leeway, don't you, Tony? You really give them a chance, don't you?
They're dead to me, those people now. See you now.
If you can't make it, fuck off.
on a slightly other note, Stu, you also, we've been chatting in the week about, you're also writing a book. Did you want to talk a little bit about that? Really interesting to me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's something I've been trying to get off the ground. We were supposed to start it this year, but then last year, 2016.
Yeah.
But with a couple of things going on personally for myself and one of the people involved, it's all been delayed. But this year, yeah, it's, you sort of talked about it a couple of weeks ago when you were talking about 90s comics, the BBC radio plays.
Yes, I loved them. Really.
Movies. The I was lucky enough, when Man of Steel came out, I pretty much took over an entire issue of Starburst and wrote articles on Lois and Clark and some other Superman stuff. I pitched them the idea of writing something about the Superman audio movies that Dirt Mags did in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And they were kind of like, fuck, we forgot those even happened. Yeah, do it.
They're out CD now as well, aren't they? They've released most of them, haven't they?
Spider-Man you can't get, and Judge Dredd you can't get, I think.
It was Independence Day UK, was that part of that?
That was Dirt Mags as well, yeah.
Yeah, I owned that on
because I interviewed him about that as well.
Right.
But yeah, I reached out to Dirk, and he was lovely, and I reached out to Lorelei King as well, who played Lois Lane. She was in all of the comic book ones.
Yeah.
And yeah, sort of did email interviews with them, and then got to know both of them through that, became friendly with them. And then I said,
yeah,
just chat with Dirk.
And so if you want to run down what he did. So he did the Trial of Superman. He did
Trial of Superman.
Yeah.
Trial of Superman, Batman Lazarus Pit was the next one. Then it was Adventures of Superman, Superman Doomsday and Beyond, Batman Nightfall. Then they did Amazing Spider-Man, which the story about they did Amazing Spider-Man is really, really good.
They basically
did it without Marvel US knowing.
Tim Quinn
was the editor of Marvel UK, so they went to him and he was like, yeah, we'll do it, but you know, you can't tell anybody, which I think is why you can't get it now.
Yeah, it's still unavailable, isn't it? And I'm right in saying that they came out in like 3 minute drops on Radio 1, I'm going to say.
I can remember that.
Superman ones, it was from Batman Nightfall, they became 3 minute drops, and I think the Superman ones might have been re-edited into 3 minute drops when they because it was Radio 4 originally, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, I've still got the tape where I taped it off Radio 4, The Trial of Superman. Because people forget, I think Dave Gibbons is in it, who obviously we talked about, his mate of Dirt Mags, isn't he?
Yeah.
And Adam West, of course he is. Yeah, I was trying to think who else it was. But yeah.
Again, that happened that Dirt Mags just found out he was in the building. He was like, fuck, I'm taking the tape recorder. I'm going to ask him if he minds doing it, just throw these questions at him. And that was that.
Yeah.
But, and he had like Jeanette Kahn on there from DC.
That's right, yeah.
And this is, you know, pre-internet as well, so the story of how he put it all together through, like, you know, faxes and phone calls and
They're really good still. The Nightfall one, I think they're all good, but I think the Nightfall one really stands up. Really does.
Nightfall one is great, but the CD, they re-edited it.
Oh, did they? Oh, okay.
I listened to the tape so many times that on the CD one, I can pretty much do it word for word as it's playing.
Yeah.
So I put in the words that were missing when I'm doing it in my head. And it's kind of like,
I think I got it off iTunes. I think you, for a while, I'm not sure if you still can, you could get it from iTunes.
Yeah, I think it might be on Audible now.
Ah, right, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the Spider-Man one you can't get, and the Judge Dredd one you can't get.
Was there two Judge? There was Apocalypse War, wasn't there?
Apocalypse War, and the other one's left my head a minute.
Was it Block War?
David Law died.
Yes, yep. And now, obviously, Big Finish owned, well, for a while, certainly they had Judge Dredd, didn't they?
Yeah, which I think is what stopped the Judge Dredd ones getting re-released on CD.
Yeah, I don't think they've still got 2000 AD. I think that's left them again. And then the Independence Day UK was a really bizarre one, wasn't it?
That was. It was great. I remember listening to that actually on the
Dave episode. Courtney's on it. Not Dave Courtney. Who played the Brigadier?
Nick Courtney.
Yeah, what? Dave Courtney's a gangster. Not Nick Courtney.
Colin Baker's
yeah.
in it, and Peter Serafinowicz is in it before Peter Serafinowicz was a big name.
Right, and okay.
Kurt Wilcox is in it.
Really? and it's like Independence, what happened to in London during
the Independence Day. Yeah, the UK Day. Side of it. Yeah.
Really
it's
weird.
Infinitely more interesting than Independence Day Resurgence or whatever.
Oh, God, I've seen that.
Came out last year was.
I tell you what we should do on the Awesome Pod. We should create like an original character or something. One episode. It'd take a lot of work, but we should totally
script
do an. We should script it and do an audio play.
Oh, we
should. Amazing! That's
we should. I'll tell you what. We should do that. We should do that for Christmas. Get a couple of guests in. Do like a few voices.
Yeah,
that'd be great. Yeah. Dan would have to play the badass superhero, though, wouldn't he? I don't think there's any doubt there.
I mean, surely there's about a Red Mars from Mars audio movie.
Yeah.
Well, there's the porn parody that I haven't shown yet.
Oh, the red ass. No.
It was a really interesting time with it all coming out. And I mean, I said when I reposted them on our website, the original article I did, that the voices from the Superman one, because it was Stuart. Oh, his bloody name's left my head. The guy from Jonathan Creek, who was the magician.
Alan Davis, is it?
No, Alan Davis was Jonathan Creek. It's the guy who played Adam, the magician. Right. Stuart. Okay. Oh, I know it. I've emailed him several times and I feel like a right prick now.
Right.
We do that on a weekly basis.
It was him and that. And those are the voices that I heard in my head as I was listening to the. Reading the comics.
Okay. I do like the Big Finish 2000 AD ones as well. They're good. Simon Pegg plays Strontium Dog. I'm not 100% sure he's that convincing as Strontium Dog, but it's good. They're well done, you know. There's about 10 of them, I think. Yeah.
But I must admit, I didn't listen to those. I didn't discover the Judge Dredd ones till much later on. And I also didn't realise until they released them on CD that there was the Trial of Superman and Batman Lazarus Pit.
Right, okay.
Stuart Milligan. Yeah. That's the name I was thinking of.
Oh, okay, right, Brill. Yeah.
But yeah, so...
So you're working on a book talking about all these?
Yeah, it's sort of looking at how they all came together and that, and how everybody came to be involved and what sort of thing. Like I say, the one for Spider-Man is a really interesting story, and even the stuff for the Superman and Batman, it's really interesting how it all came together. It's sort of... At a time when not everybody had a TV in their room as well, that was the way that you could digest...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've
over and
that's how I used to listen to War of the Worlds, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, all this sort of thing, you know.
Yeah. I love all those audiobook kind of things that actual plays, and there's varying ways that people do them. You get the ones that are quite badly done. It's like, look at this gentleman in a grey suit standing in the window, kind of like really descriptive. There's ones that just do it subtly, so you can picture it in your head, and it's possible with the Dirt Mags ones that because I'd read the comics, I could picture it in my head a bit easier anyway. But the Spider-Man one was great as well, because it was a lot of the old Spider-Man stuff that I'd never really read.
A couple of years ago I discovered the Trial of Superman Radio Times issue that I'd saved.
I've got that framed up on my wall.
Have you? I sent you the article, didn't I, that I wrote? Which I got a few comments from Dirk Mags about that at the time, because I think he's quite accessible on Twitter and stuff, isn't he?
Oh yes, yeah, he's wonderful.
Chatty guy. Everyone write to him. But yeah, really interesting stuff, and I love the way they did it. So they basically put Superman on trial, but they called Lex Luthor came and gave evidence, and Lois Lane.
Lex Luthor was the counselor for the prosecution. Lois Lane was his defense attorney.
Yeah, and they called real people, so they called Jeanette Kahn.
To answer
questions. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Adam West was called as Adam West to talk about the role of Superman and Batman in the world. They sort of did it with Batman Lazarus Pit as well. That it was sort of a docudrama that explored the past, but they did it as a drama without the talking heads kind of approach to it.
Yeah, I've got that on CD. That's the one I hadn't heard until I realised it was available on CD.
It's good, but the voices are all slightly different or off compared to in Nightfall, which takes me a little while to sort of get into it kind of thing, because it's like, you don't sound right.
They go for it in Nightfall, don't they? It's full on eat the furniture acting, isn't it? You know, yeah, really is.
So, yeah. Is this just an ongoing project, or do you have like a deadline or a release?
I don't have a deadline because we've not got a publisher or anything. It's sort of, we spent a little bit of time sort of shopping around to a few publishers who were like, we like it, but it's not really for us, kind of thing.
Mm.
And I think that was a bit disheartening for both of us to a degree, because it's an element of comics that's never really been discussed. People discuss the movies, the TV shows, all the other stuff, but no. And given how important radio is in the development of Superman particularly.
Oh god, yeah. I mean, that's where Kryptonite came from. Oh, that's a TV series, wasn't it? Kryptonite came from.
No, Kryptonite was the radio, because
it was the radio, right, okay.
Superman wanted to take a 2-week holiday.
Right, okay.
So they brought in Kryptonite to have an excuse for him not to be in it, and he was basically in it but not speaking.
Was Jimmy Olsen from the one of those as well? I've got
Perry White, I think, came from that. I think Perry Daily White, Planet, right. Came from that.
That's right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? When you think these things, a lot of we think, oh, it's been Superman lore because of the comics, you know, but no, it's come from those sort of things. Yeah,
I think it was that and a couple of things from the old Fleischer cartoon sort of came into Superman.
Definitely.
But yeah, no, it's just a fascinating thing that a lot of people don't know about, and unfortunately, because there was supposed to be a box set of the CDs of the DC stuff come out, but it got pulled at the last minute because Batman v Superman was coming out.
Right,
I didn't want anything to distract away from Batman v Superman. I don't know if I should say this or not, actually. But, the story I heard was that they didn't want anything distracting away from Batman v Superman on the cinema.
Right.
I would have thought, if you're excited about Batman v Superman, you'll eat any shit with Batman and Superman on it.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And
like, maybe the comics? Who knows? You know what I mean? Hint, hint. Yeah.
If Zack Snyder's not going to read them, why should we?
Yeah. But I tell you what, Audible books now, with Audible and all that sort of thing, audiobooks are really popular now, aren't they? Yeah.
They are as well. It's kind of, I was expecting a couple of the people we pitched the book to come back to us being kind of, actually, this shit's really popular now. We might be interested in the book, but it's not happened yet. But
it's certainly right. I mean, I consume more books because of Audible now. I mean, I used to read more sort of novels and stuff when I had a longer journey to work, but now that I walk to work, that's out the window. So now it's, you know, audio books while I'm at work, or you know it's audio plays. I remember Good Omens was one of the ones that I listened to recently, which is really
cool. Dirt Mags as well.
The BBC Radio one of that is a Dirt Mags, because he's done a lot of Neil Gaiman stuff recently.
Is there Neverwhere? There's Neverwhere, I think.
Neverwhere,
as well,
there's How the Marquee Got His Coat Back came out.
Yes, of course there is.
Stardust is out next month.
Right, okay.
As well. Right, I was kind of like, that's the follow-up book sorted then.
So, if there's any book publishers or anyone out there who realises that this is a thing that, you know, needs a book made out of it, get in touch with Stu.
Cool.
That's what we're saying.
Yeah, like I said, I mean...
As long as we can hear the voices.
Oh, yeah.
We got to the thing where it was kind of like, I'm committed to this, I want to do it. It's the book I wish I had when I was a teenager.
Yeah,
I had all the movie making of books, but I never had anything on the audio stuff.
Yeah,
I think it's really interesting. It was kind of getting across to Dirk to a certain degree. There are a lot more people that actually really cared about this than he potentially realizes.
Mm.
So I think sometimes you sort of put these things out into the world and you assume a couple of people listened. But he was genuinely surprised when I got in touch with him and wanted to talk so passionately with him about it for the article.
Well, like you say, that's all we had at one point, wasn't it? There was nothing on television. You know, we just used to listen to these things over and over again. I've got the cassettes in front of me. On the shelf in front of me, you know.
I've got them on a shelf, and all the ones I replaced on CD as well. I mean, the Spider-Man one, I won in a Radio 1 competition.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think I got the 90-second one pressed or something like that.
Yeah, cool.
Which, apparently, when I mentioned that to Dirk, he was like, oh, Christ, I remember that. That was a nightmare. So it was basically him and, I think, Tim Quinn sitting in a room just stamping these CDs and... putting it all together and sending it out.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, so, like I say, so I was like, look, I'm committed to this. I want to do it. I know you're busy, so I'm just going to... I know Dirk's busy, so I'm just going to go ahead and start meeting up with people, either via Skype or actually face-to-face where I can, and put it together, and then once we've got something cohesive, we can start shopping it around again then, so people have got a better idea of what we're talking about. Because I think, to a certain degree, sometimes you're like, I want to write a book about audiobooks, and people are like, what?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I've heard of Meta, but this is fucked up, my friend.
Yeah. Audiobooks are about comics.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for talking to us about True Believers. And
we're looking forward to it, mate. Really are.
It's going to be good.
I'm generally an orange blur on the day. It's like all these people want to stop and talk to me, but it's like I've got to run and put this fire out, and then I'll try and get back to you. Like by the end of the day, it's kind of like, fuck, I never got back to you, did I? It's like, it's the cruelest thing of putting on a convention that is the kind of convention you really want to go to, is that you get to live it vicariously the day after.
Right, okay, yeah.
Rather than...
Because I asked you whether you're going to the pub afterwards, and you're not even sure about that, whether you'll be able to make that, are you?
No, I mean, the last two... Because I'm based in Gloucester, so it's like a 10-mile drive.
Right.
Which isn't... Well, actually, no, it's probably about 20, 30 miles or other. But... Oh, I fucking crap a distance this time. But yeah, usually by the time I get home, my intention is to go back out, and I just kind of like collapse because I've been up since like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right, yeah.
And everything's ready, and then
you get in
or like 7:30 to get everything set up ready. Because the other key thing is that we make sure there are people there to help people bring their stuff in.
Yeah.
So it is literally from when we get there from 7:30, we're straight into it. There's a little bit of kind of like, this is where you will be. But for the meantime, everybody is here, and it's just straight into the job. And then the day doesn't stop for me until the end. And when it gets a little bit quieter, I get to go around some of the tables and buy some books and catch up with some people I've not seen for a while. But yeah,
no, cool.
Otherwise, it's all a bit of a blur for me, unfortunately. And then I get to see people's posts.
Yeah, so convention wrap-up pieces, and you think, oh my God, what happened there?
It's like, that's really cool. I wish I'd seen that.
Checking the hashtags. So for those... who want to know more about True Believers, who, where, what, when, and how.
Sickos.
Where can people find out more about it?
We've got our own website, which is oktruebelievers.com, which I think confuses people because I think they think the event's called OK True Believers, but we wanted to do it because we wanted to do it as a... We took ages settling on a name.
Yeah.
And came up with True Believers, and then I jokingly did the Stanley OK True Believers thing.
Right.
That's your website, because it was already a truebelievers.com. So I just chuck OK from it. And it sort of became the running joke, because then every time I give it out, I get to like hear Stanley in my head, and it soothes me a little bit.
Yeah.
And
we all need a bit of Stanley in our heads, don't we?
I'm kind of amazed Marvel haven't told us to shut this shit down.
Yeah.
Because they went after people who were using Excelsior at one point. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think they won, but they went after a few people. I think it was in that stupid phase where it was like, we own the term on the copyright on superhero, and
all that rubbish,
all that shit, and it's kind of like, really. So we went with that. So yeah, OK True Believers is the website, and then we're on Facebook, which is just / OK True Believers, Twitter at OK True Believers, and I believe we're on Instagram as well now, which I think is also OK True Believers, but. Instagram is lost on me.
You hipster.
Yeah, I know. I'm growing a beard, so I can feel more comfortable saying.
What are you talking about? We're on it. We're on there.
I didn't say we weren't hipster.
Okay. You fucking hipsters. Yeah.
Well, it depends whether you're on there ironically or not.
Yeah.
I'm on there rarely. That's what it is. Oh dear.
Yeah, that was just something that was kind of like, because it's getting harder to reach people on Facebook and Twitter because the way Facebook is being structured now. And somebody was, one of the people that helps was just like, why don't you just try Instagram? I was like, I don't really have a
clue. It helps to have lots of different avenues.
That's when I turn into like a 30 something dad. Kind of like, what is this Instagram thing?
Yeah, Tinder's good.
Oh God.
Sugardaddy.com's quite good as well, I find, for networking.
Oh dear God.
Throw it right back into the days of Face Party. Facebook, it was all Face Party where you could pretty much go on there and find somebody you wanted to fuck that night.
Oh my God, why didn't I know about this?
One of the guys I worked with back in the old days when I worked at FOB, he was on that, and it was like, yeah, just horrible.
All good.
I mean, he was happy, but
left you speechless.
Yeah. It was just kind of one of those dirty, dirty things. Just kind of, I just feel filthy watching.
Oh dear,
that came out very wrong.
Speaking of filth, do we have any shout-outs this week?
I've got a couple.
Okay.
Firstly, to Jay Martin, Chris Sides, Matt Rook, The Lamming, Chris Travell, and John Late, who I spent a long period of time in the pub with last night. Good company. Thanks for that. They've got all of them to a man has got some very interesting projects on the go. Really cool. And beyond True Believers, which we're all gearing up for now, if you're at the 2000 AD festival on the 11th of February in Hammersmith, I'm doing the final panel of the day with Pat Mills, which I'm really chuffed about.
Yay.
Pop along in, and I think there might be a couple of weird blokes at the back holding microphones.
There may be
questions from the audience. So Yeah, so come along to that. It's going to be a blast. Pat will be on absolute top form. And then I think from that they lead into the Strontium Dog movie. And then obviously drinking a lot of beer, which I'm sure if it wouldn't be 2000 AD without a lot of drunken creators hanging about. So it's going to be really good. Really looking forward to that. That's me, mate.
They're going
to
need another documentary after this, aren't they?
I think they will, yeah.
Stuart, do you have any shout-outs?
True Believers, obviously. Not just the event, but go on the website and check out some of the five question interviews and some of the other things on there. There's a lot of great stuff going on.
That's a great idea, I have to say. Yeah.
We've got a few books that are launched at the event as well, which has got its own page. So that's stuff worth checking out.
Just about to mention one, actually. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep.
And once we're out of the way and you've done 2000 AD, give a shout out to Leamington Comic Con.
Yay. Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm hoping Dan will give me a like crafty backhand or some cash or something.
Wait,
a crafty one. We don't condone any of that on this show.
Dutch rudder.
But yeah, no, Leamington's a great event. I've been I went to the first two and they didn't do one last year, so I just stood outside looking longingly into the venue.
We had one last year, it was like the last one, didn't we?
Yeah.
We had a good time. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and we're going to be back again, so it's going to be interesting.
I think we're doing a panel again, aren't we?
Oh yeah, we get everywhere. We're dirty panel whores, aren't we, really?
Yeah, here we are, yeah.
But yeah, if you're based in Cheltenham, check out Proud Lion Comics, which is the local comic shop here, because I firmly believe you should support your local comic shop. And if you're based in Leamington, check out Spartown Comics as well. Because I think they're doing a really great thing with what they're building there.
Yeah.
If Dan asks, I never said any of this, though,
right? Oh, no.
Don't go into his head.
These people who make conventions, they're just egomaniacs.
Wrong with them. Yeah.
But yeah, and then are we doing book recommendations now or in a minute?
We are indeed.
Yes, very good.
Yes, so in terms of like quality books for our lovely listeners to check out, Tony, do you want to go first?
Well, I've got two. I was going to do one of these last week, but I was having a few technical problems. First one is Map of Days, which is by Robert Hunter, which if you go over to downthetubes.net, you'll find a load of examples of the artwork in the review that I did earlier this week. And it's an article that got quite a lot of heat, actually. It was really popular, from what I can see. It's a sort of illustrated book. It's not quite a comic, and it's not quite an illustrated novel. It sits somewhere between the two. It does have a series of panels, and they work sequentially, but there's no sort of word or thought balloons in it, if that makes sense. Really, really beautiful stuff. It covers so many things. It starts off with the creation of the solar system, and it moves into a slightly more personal story about a young boy who goes to stay with his granddad, and he discovers that every night his granddad opens a big grandfather clock and climbs inside and climbs down into this strange world that he follows him into, and it sort of spirals off from there. Robert has done also a couple of other books, The New Ghost and The Land of Nod, both of which are just incredibly beautiful stuff. This is actually a repackaging of a book from a couple of years ago, but they've done it so well, as they do always at Nobrow. Beautiful. Probably some of the best colour work I've seen in a long time. And the layouts, the panel layouts, just sort of spread out in front of you, like, you know, almost like a fan on occasion. Really beautiful stuff. Only $12.99 hardback, which is a great price. If you go to nobrow.net, you'll find it there. Or if you go to robertfrankhunter.com for Robert's website, for example, the artwork, or if you go to r_f_hunter on Twitter, you'll find his stuff. Really, really great stuff. And just so impressed with it. And the other one is, which I thought was Duriguer for tonight. Absolutely brilliant. I got sent this a couple of days ago by Kev Brett, The Making of a Comic-Con. Have you had a chance to see this yet, Stu?
Yeah, he sent me a copy as well. It's pretty much my life put down on paper.
Yeah.
I was like, have you been following me? Because he does Nottingham, doesn't he? People who don't know, which I've not had a chance to go to, but
yeah,
we stole some stuff from when we were setting up Drew.
Nice. We're friends with Kev, and Kev is one of the nicest blokes in comics, I've got to tell you, but he quietly beavers away at these sort of all-ages comics that are just absolutely hilarious and full of sort of personality. Really great stuff. But this one is autobiographical. It's about him and the sort of trials and tribulations and the anxieties and funnies of organising a comic convention, and, you know, the sleepless nights and the, you know, the highs and lows of the day. And they literally go from, oh my God, that guest is accepted, to, oh no, what's happening now? And, you know, he's always running about, and then he's finally finished it. And at the point he finishes it, I'm sure he has to think, oh, I've got to start next year's now, Right, are we going to get along? You know, he's like a ball of energy, Kev. He really is. He's going to have a table, I think, at True Believers.
He is. He's at True Believers, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember what his table number is, but it's on the website and it's on the launching it. Or if you go onto the table pages on the website,
right,
it tells you who's at what table anyway, but because that the making of a Comic-Con's launching, so it's on the launch at True Believers page. So Kev is at table K6.
K6,
which,
there
if you look at the floor plan, will mean something to you. If it doesn't, it's just a random assigned letter and number.
Right, okay. If you go to Twitter, you can find Kev at Kev underscore Brett, B-R-E-T-T. Or if you go to PiddlyPix, PiddlyPix.com, PiddlyPix.com, you'll find some examples of loads of his other comics and stuff like that. Real fun stuff. Yeah, that's my two, dude. There you go.
It's a great thing as well, the making, especially from the side of something, because I think people have a preconceived idea of what goes into making a Comic-Con.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
And I think to a certain degree, we possibly had that when we put it together. It's only that I care so much about how it is that, you know, you realise how much work actually goes into it.
Yeah.
Especially when you realise that people are buying tables, so you're essentially playing with other people's money.
Yeah.
Which adds an extra layer of pressure on, because you don't want anybody to have a table that doesn't at least make their money back.
Yeah, you don't want that sad face as you walk past, you know.
No, that's it.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm guilty of a little bit of kind of like leading the witness of being like, you having a good day? I'm sort of asking it in that, I may run away if you're going to be any kind of negative.
I find it genuinely upsetting
when people don't, and it's...
Yeah.
I mean, which is another reason...
Sorry, mate, go on.
It's another reason why we try and do the things on the website where we promote people as much as possible. It's on our book and a table page, is that you don't just get the table and that, you get a commitment from us that we will promote your thing. And we'll continue to promote it even if you don't come back to the event. If you've got a Kickstarter coming up,
okay, cool,
we'll promote your Kickstarter for you. We'll do as much as you can. I mean, it is just me on my own doing the day-to-day stuff. I've got Andy does all the graphic stuff, and then we've got a great group of people on the day, but the day-to-day running of it is me, so I do fall behind on things sometimes, unfortunately.
Not noticeably, dude, I've got to tell you.
I do try and as much as possible promote people's things as well, especially if it's relevant. I mean, there was a stage where we were getting so many people with a Kickstarter. It was like, I've got to scale this back because I can't keep monthly being like, here are five Kickstarters you should back.
Got it, yeah.
And it's kind of like, I mean, it's one of the things last week when you were talking about reviews, and, you know, comic journalists, a lot of people have been like, why don't you review things on the website? It's like, because I...
Oh my God,
One, who am I to judge whether your book is good or not? Kind of thing. I'm in no means an expert on it. I'm a fan who enjoys comics.
Right.
And I can say whether I like something or don't like something, but that doesn't mean it's not any good, kind of thing.
Yep.
And for the other thing is that we want the website to be a positive thing, and if you're going to just do positive reviews, you sort of lose your
credibility.
You become one of those magazines you should get free at the cinema that was like, come and watch Godzilla, it's going to be amazing, Roland Emmerich back on form, and then you watch it, it's like, this is a piece of shit and this magazine lied to me. But it says Batman and Robin's good, so let's go.
Yeah, so I wrote in this start, I'm writing a thing for Down the Tubes for the making of a Comic-Con, so sort of writing some notes, and my first note in on the page here I notice is organise a Comic-Con, I fucking dare you, I think is the phrase I was going to open it with.
Well, the term I've coined for it is bedroom Comic-Cons. It's a bit like a garage band. It's these people that I was talking to, I can't remember if it was Shane I was talking to about it, or possibly Dan from Lemington, and I know I was talking to Alex from Pipe Dream about it, and I was saying that it's the people that, they have a day job, they have a family potentially, and then at the end of that day they still want to do this Comic-Con thing.
Yeah.
And it's the people who are literally sitting on their bed at night watching, just having noise on in the background on the telly, putting a Comic-Con together.
Right, okay.
And I think with ours especially, and probably with ICE, I think people think it's more of a business machine, in it, that, you know, we've got an office somewhere and you know, there's an army of people working on it, and it's not. It is literally the Comic-Con equivalent of a garage band or that sort of thing. And it's sort of, that's the way I've always looked at it, is that, you know, we're bedroom Comic-Cons.
Okay, I quite like the idea of having a Comic-Con in my bedroom.
Oh God,
well,
plenty of cosplay going on there.
There's a workshop for you.
Yeah.
I'll be doing cosplay. I'll be Greystoke from Tarzan, because I don't think he wore anything.
Grey Stroke.
And if I can just add as well, with the John Late interesting things they're working on, he's designed a character competition that he was running. He's extended to After Troop. He was now he's doing a little workshop for the kids that's going to get them in to sort of design a character. If they want to enter it into the competition, they can. If they don't, they just want to keep it for themselves, and that's also cool.
That's him, and yeah, he's gonna, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and they're going to talk about, you know, how you create a character, what you put into a character, both in terms of writing it and drawing it. And yeah, it's something we're sort of trialing to get kids a bit more involved in it and
create it. Yeah, yeah, excellent.
Because, again, something I'm passionate about, and yeah, it seemed like a competition. So.
Cool.
Lovely job.
Nice one. So, Vincenzo, what have you got?
My pick for this week is issue 2 of a comic that I ranted about on an earlier episode.
Right.
Todd Oliver's Boxes, number 2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw this. Yeah.
Yeah, very kindly sent it through. I think we all got a copy, didn't we?
Yeah.
Now, we ranted about Boxes on the issue 1 on an episode, and he very kindly put us in a thank yous on the inside cover.
Didn't he? That was really cool, wasn't it?
Which was nice, actually. But that's not why we're mentioning it. I mention it because it's issue 2 is bloody brilliant as well.
Good.
I liken it to, it's like a sketch show. If you, it feels like that real surreal. You know, Big Train. You know.
Yeah.
That's probably. It's almost like a comic book version of Big Train. There's real surreal humor going on. There's like one page artistic pieces that, you know, aren't necessarily jokes, but they're slightly thought-provoking. But everything's got this real... There's a real nice sense of humour running throughout it. I mean, it says from the offset, it's got the strangest... One of the strangest covers ever, of this giant worm, like, pushing itself through people's heads. and a little flash that says 24 fully coloured pages of passable quality. And, yeah, the first strip, which is just called Alien Comic, which is about 3 or 4 pages, immediately you know what you're in for, and I mean that in the sense of you look at it, it's an experience, and you're like, what? And on page 2, it has quite an expressive, shocking, fecal joke that completely took me by surprise.
Something we like on this show.
And made me laugh. To say it's called Alien Comic, that strip, but you have to see it for yourself. It's there's something beautifully suburban about it, which made me laugh. There's a strip about a guy going to get a piercing. He definitely looks like a hipster, and the piercing is probably the most extreme piercing you've ever seen in your life, which is a one-page splash panel visual joke, which is hilarious. There's the return of the accidental cannibal. Who was in the first issue. He has a very unfortunate first date with a lady. Let's just say, you know that Lady and the Tramp moment where they're eating spaghetti?
Yeah.
That goes horribly, horribly wrong, which is hilarious. Just really surreal at some point. There's a strip called Me, which is the longest strip in the comic. And the only dialogue is the word you. Like, this man's walking... like living his life, but he on the paper it's nothing but pictures of him. Everyone he's meeting looks a bit like him. His mug has his face on it, which while he's drinking his coffee just says you. The bus is literally his face, and it's just really surreal.
God, this seemed like a nightmare that I had recently.
He's very much he vomits at one point, and his vomit is himself.
That's cool.
Yeah. And that has like a one panel sort of finish to it, which sort of flips it round in a real surreal kind of way that leaves you thinking, but it also says to be continued, and I have no idea how he could possibly continue this. Now there's a page for an advert that said, you've had your own worm farm or ant farm, now you need a life cube. Which is a little cube where you keep a miniature human being on a fake street that you have to keep stocked with food and fake people. Otherwise, your mini-human will die. If your mini-human dies, don't worry, you can buy another one for $2.99. It's loads of funny strips like that. The one that... It just shows how puerile I am, because there's a science fiction strip in it which is almost like a little episode from like a Blake Seven or you know, an old Star Trek. But the title of it is "The Anus of My Eye." which has to be seen to be believed. I will leave
that's
it.
That's got
that.
A genuine 70s cheap sci-fi sounding name.
It sounds like a bit like a splinter of the mind's eye, or something, isn't it?
And it involves a guy who has like some sort of weird wormhole sort of portal in his eye, but then there's a weird crotch snake that comes in. I can't quite.
Crotch snake. Did you use that phrase?
No. it has to be seen to be believed. I love boxes. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's good.
Todd's a very humble creator. I think the fact that anyone checks out, he's one of those creators that anyone checks out his comics, he's kind of surprised. But you can see why. There's a wonderful sense of humour. You can still get copies of issue one, I think. I think he did a small run that is available in like Orbital and Gosh and stuff.
Yeah.
But to find out more about it, you can follow him on Twitter at Todd Oliver. Go to boxescomic.com where you can buy actual issues of Boxes itself, you know, digital and hard copy. And I highly recommend it because it's just wonderful. It's absolutely fantastic. It's comedy that's, I don't want to use the word surreal again. It's got that wonderful British surrealist kind of feel, you know, all those great sort of comedians like the big.
It's like the animation that Terry Gilliam did in the Monty Python movies and series.
Yeah,
reminds me a little bit of that, you know.
It's like it's that kind of stuff mixed with the mindset of like Chris Morris and like, you know,
that, a little bit of Salvador Dali, maybe a bit of that as well. Yeah. That sort of weird angle and
if Salvador Dali made a sketch show,
yeah,
Salvador Dali does the Fast Show. That's what this would be.
And Dave Angel.
Like a moonlit shadow. But boxescomic.com is well worth your time. So we'll have to get Todd on here one day.
Yeah, we'll do. Yeah, definitely.
Prepared to talk. Anyway, Stu, what would you like to recommend?
I've touched upon a couple already and you've mentioned them before. So like Rabbit by Rachel Smith, I always recommend. I've not read anything new for a while. Dot Dino, you've talked about a lot. I picked that up at Melksham and loved it. Recently I've gone back to, there's a couple of comics that I'll always go back to sort of when I'm feeling like I just need to unwind, and one of them is Shannon Wheeler's Too Much Coffee Man.
Oh, brilliant, I love that. Yeah,
which,
how good is
that?
It's
fantastic. I've got all the individual issues, but that was sort of the first properly independent indie sort of comic I discovered.
That's a classic kind of like one of those small press US.
Well, it was, because one of the comics in it, because it's each issue was sort of an anthology of three ongoing series. You had the Too Much Coffee Man standalone story, then you had one that was sort of an autobiographical one about him sort of creating mini comics to sell in his local comic shop of Too Much Coffee Man, and then sort of how that grew to it becoming the thing it was. And then there's one about a guy and his love life with his ex-girlfriend and that sort of thing. And they're just really great compelling reads, but they're short blocks to read, so it's really nice to read. But the omnibus that Dark Horse put out a few years back is great. Like I say, I dug mine out the other day because I just kind of like wanted to go back to an old friend kind of thing. And
I didn't know they did an omnibus. I've still got like the magazine issues, but I might try and dig that out myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, it's good. Got all the issues that Dark Horse did and the ones that he did before Dark Horse as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
Dark Horse always do a nice collection, I think. They're always good.
They do, yeah. It's nice. It's all black and white. It's all lovely and really quirky art style as well.
Hmm.
It's kind it's of a very, sort of size of... Sorry, mate, it's the size of what Starburst is now, isn't it?
Yeah, the magazine was, yeah.
Not quite a full sort of 2000 AD size. It's sort of slightly smaller, isn't it?
Yeah, they've got their own spines and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Get them out on the shelf. But yeah, the magazine, when they moved in towards that, has got some great articles in it as well. Like, there was a guy who was in prison who used to write an article for each issue. And that sort of thing. But yeah, that was the sort of thing that led me on the... There are more interesting things out there than just the spandex and capes, kind of.
Right.
Stuff, which I love the spandex and cape stuff as well, and I will never be deterred from that. And I'll. There was a period where it was kind of, ugh, you like that stuff, and fortunately that seems to have gone away again now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that, which then led me on the path to discovering Bone and Jack Staff and Lethargic Lad and all that sort of thing, and then started my love affair with Terry Moore's work.
Nice.
From Streams in Paradise onto Echo, and then Rachel Rising and now Motor Girl.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Too Much Coffee Man, if you can, well worth digging out the Omnibus or a couple of the trades, which are all collected in the Omnibus. So
it's a nice, it's a nice small press character that not a lot of people, certainly probably modern comic book creators, may not know about. It may have snuck under their radar.
Yeah, yeah. It's the same sort of period as maybe Flaming Carrot. And,
yeah.
Who was the milkman who used to beat people up? What was his name? I can't remember his name now.
You're not talking about Milk and Cheese?
No, Reed Fleming, milkman, or something like that. Wasn't it? Yeah. Remember him? Yeah.
Reed Fleming, amazing. There you go. It's a great record.
Yeah, there's that. And then there's a online only comic by Dean Tripp called Something Terrible.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. This is the child abuse one.
It's fantastic. It's a few years old now, but I found it recently because I bought it and just found it on my laptop. I'd kind of forgotten about it. I discovered it through the Batman podcast.
That's where I found about it. Yeah, exactly.
And read it, and it's just beautifully written.
Yeah. How's it getting on with the Kickstarter? Has that come out yet? Do you know?
I don't know. I haven't checked for a while, to be perfectly honest with you. I was going to check today, but then I sort of, with this and everything else, getting emails sorted, I've not really had time.
You don't have time for anything.
I don't. No. Yeah. I got kids somewhere, apparently. I've heard they're lovely.
Yeah, they're in the airing cupboard.
I think one's in the washing machine. He seems fine.
Yeah, at least to be clean.
But yeah, no, it's nice to have those sort of, not so much, Something Terrible is a great, great thing, but it's not a fun read kind of thing. It's oddly feel good given the subject matter.
Yeah, that panel with all the characters in, I won't ruin it, but that is a great panel, isn't it? Yeah, you could look at that for ages.
That's beautiful, and just the... Yeah. It's not a massive spoiler, because he talks about it in interviews, but the thing where he's got to the point where all these American cop shows tell him that because he was molested, he will become a molester.
Yeah.
And he has a child, and he just doesn't want to bath his child. He doesn't want to do anything that involves touching his child, because he's worried he's going to have those urges.
Yeah, it's that...
It's that point where he's thinking about killing himself, and then...
It's that media-driven lie that is the truth, and it simply isn't.
Pedophiles kind of thing.
They don't. That's rubbish, yeah. I think a lot of it is fueled by the fact that a lot of people who get convicted of it of falsely report things, you know?
Yeah, they blame it on a past rather than the fact they're just
being evil. Exactly.
But yeah, there's a beautiful panel in it where he's got a gun to his head, and then you just get Batman's hand go on his shoulder, and he just says, "No guns."
Oh, break your heart. Yeah, I remember reading it the first time thinking it's
fucking beautiful. And I mean, he pretty much on Fatman on Batman lays out the entire story. So I went into it knowing what happened, and it did not dilute the impact with anything it added to it for me.
Yeah.
And it's just a beautiful example of what you can do with comics.
Yes, exactly. I wrote an email to him when it came out. I was due for a number of reasons for work and stuff, and he wrote back to me, and you know, really interesting email. Yeah, conversation I had with him, very much so. Yeah.
Yeah, I dropped him a Twitter message just saying how much I enjoyed it. That, you know, I can't ever begin to understand this experience, but it was just a beautiful piece of writing and drawing. And his art is fantastic. He posts.
It's very Scott McCloud, I think. Which is good to me.
Yeah, it's that Scott McCloud clean lines.
Yeah.
Bruce Timm kind of thing. I'm a big fan of clean line sort of art as well.
Yeah.
But he's just a wonderful guy who is genuinely touched whenever anybody seems to get in touch with him as well.
Well, you won't get a better recommendation than that, really.
Definitely.
To sign off the show. And I can't possibly make a funny segue out of any of that.
We'll try.
Let us know what you thought about this episode. And if you've got any, if you've got a small press book or want to know more about like conventions, etc., and you want to ask us, there's several different ways you can do it. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com as well. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be pimping out this episode, of course. So if you see one of our tweets, retweet it, because we're desperate attention whores. And and of course we do the weekly polls, etc., so keep an eye out for them. And this coming week there's going to be some interesting polls, and I'll let you know about that in a second. Facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast is the main group. Tell everyone about us and like us, etc. And we also have the group discussion Awesome Comics Talk, which if you listen to this show and you want to talk about it, let us know in the comments, post up your own things if you know, there's some great discussions that go on there.
We're getting some really good interaction. Yeah. Like a lot of, there's been quite a few posts already today and all this sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been really busy stuff. Today and this week. Some great stuff.
Yeah, and it's mostly talking about your convention actually, Stu, because we've been saying what's dropping there, and people have been. Dave Broughton's come up with something, and all kinds of people have. Yeah.
And I like what I like about it is how respectful people are. It's not just an empty shilling. Box,
yeah, we don't want any crap on there, to be fair, but
it's genuinely a place for the people listening to the show and the people that are involved with it to just talk openly, so that's cool. So get on that. Thank you for listening to us on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com, if you listen to us on iTunes, leave us a review. That helps get the word out. I think we've had some decent reviews recently, haven't we? I think we're slowly but surely heading up the charts. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on Stitcher or the Podnose Network. Now, next week, before we do the final sign-off, next week is going to be quite a fun show. It's going to be a crossover show of sorts.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're going to be talking to Stacey Taylor of Stacey's Pop Culture Parlour, the Pop Culture Parlour, and it's going to be the Pop Culture Rumble. Now, this may be a slightly spoiler. There may be a few spoilers in this episode, but the Awesome Pod is taking time. We never normally talk too much about films, TV, whatever, because we're usually about the funny books, aren't we? We're all about the books and the sequentials, but we all watch this stuff, we all love it, and we've all got opinions on it. So we wanted to take 1 week just to have a bit of fun and just rant and rave and have a laugh talking about...
It'll be about comics in other mediums,
yes.
Let's put it that way, won't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I'll get my 13-page critique of Man of Steel together then.
Now we are, because it's a rumble, we're going to be doing some polls, where each one of us—that's myself, Tony, Dan, and Stacey—we're going to be picking out some choices that we want you, lovely listeners, to vote upon, and we're going to see who wins each round. So that's quite funny. So so keep an eye out for that. That's going to be cracking. I think it's going to be a right laugh. Stacey's already asked if she can swear, even the C word.
Which we refer to as comics.
He didn't tell me we could drop the C word.
Vince gets upset because I said it in rhyming slang once and it got past him. Yeah.
Yes. Too much gets past me most of these days. So there you go. That's next week's episode. But where can people find us on Twitter, social media, and online, etc.? Tony?
Ezohyz on Twitter. Down the Tubes, it's quite a few things gone up this week. And please pop along to one of our panels. Come along if you're True Believers and see us. I'll be larking about. I'll probably be a bit mad. And Vince will be a bit angry with me. And and come along
to... Press pass now.
Yeah, I've got it. It's arrived. Come along to... see the Pat Mills talk, which closes the 2000 AD festival, which we're really excited about. Yeah. And the night before that, so the 10th, about I think it's 6:37, there's Pat and Kevin O'Neill are doing a signing at Gosh Comics, which I'll also be at, so pop along and see them there. There you go.
You can follow me online at Jess the Diablo and find out more about my comic at theredmousefrommars.com. As Vanguard's coming back, go to vanguardcomic.com and follow Dan the Man Butcher at Vanguard Comic. He's always posting stuff online, that boy, isn't he? He can't stay away from social media, even though it drives him to kill.
That's where he's gone now. Kill someone.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, I hope that's not true.
Too late, no takesies, backsies.
Yeah, very true. That's his motto. Where can people find you online, etc., Stu?
My personal Twitter is at TokenNerd, but not a lot of exciting happens on there. I've mostly been telling Donald Trump he's a dumbass on there recently. So I'm going to get nuked at some point. OK True Believers on Twitter and Facebook and everything. We're uniform across the thing. And the website, it's, like I say, it's got the con stuff on there, but we also do other things. Articles go up on there occasionally. I've reposted a lot of the stuff. The original Dirt Mags article I did on there, did for Starburst, has been reprinted up on the website with a new introduction. Some of the old pieces I wrote, like I said, I've put back up on there. And like I say, we've got the 5-question interviews. Again, if you're small press and you want something you want us to put out for you, or you're interested in maybe a small interview in that, we don't do all our stuff is about talking about the stuff we celebrate and love, so it's all positive sort of thing. But yeah, if you're interested in that, check us out, and then yeah, you might be interested in maybe an interview or something going up on our website too. Nice. Yeah, that's it. So yeah, it's mostly the website is the hub, and we've got a few things going on social media as well, but we're all under the OK True Believers blanket.
It's all about the love. We're all about the love on this show, and it's been a long one, and we've given you so much love. We're tired, we're going to roll over, have a cigarette and fall asleep and probably break wind, aren't we, Tony?
I've just broken wind. Now I'm mute for a second.
Never mute the farts, Tony. Anyway, have a brilliant week, folks. Read comics, and just in general, just stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
This is 82 or 83.
82. Oh, fuck me. Come on.
It's 82.
Come on.
This is basic. Come on.
All right, guys. I got it. It's 82.
Oh, you let us down.
Thanks. Thanks.